Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, January 22nd, 2008 Carrboro Board of Aldermen public hearing meeting. Alderman Joel Brown will be a few minutes late. She's been busy at work, and she will be with us shortly. Before we begin our regularly printed agenda, I wanted to read a proclamation that I am issuing. Whereas the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change concludes that many natural systems are being affected by regional climate changes, particularly temperature increases, and whereas increasing evidence associates changes in physical and biological systems with human activities, and whereas the potential impacts of climate change range from species extinction to rising sea levels to increased frequency and severity of droughts to potentially disastrous impacts on the availability of food and water in many regions, and whereas in 2004 the United States emitted over 7 billion metric tons of greenhouse gases, 83% of which was carbon dioxide, and whereas it is both the responsibility and the duty of those of us living today to leave the children of the future a healthy global environment, and whereas if we as a community and as a nation are to reduce the risk of large-scale, irreversible worldwide damage due to climate change, then ambitious and potentially costly policy solutions must be undertaken within a very compressed time frame. Now, therefore, I, Mark Chilton, Mayor of the Town of Carrboro, who hereby proclaim that my support for the students of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and their effort to focus the community on the issues surrounding climate change on January 31st, 2008, and do hereby proclaim January 31st, 2008 as Climate Change Awareness Day in the town of Carrboro. Further, I encourage all residents of Carrboro to actively engage in discussions or activities focusing on climate change and to take at least one proactive step to reduce your own or your family's environmental footprint for the sake of our own health and well-being and that of future generations, this, the 21st day of January 2008.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you to Alderman Randy Haven O'Donnell, who was instrumental in drafting that document.
Bringing it to Carrboro.
With that, we will begin our public hearings. Our first public hearing is a temporary street closing permit application for the Carrboro Classic Endurance Sports Festival. Does the board require a presentation from the staff on this, or is the printed material sufficient? Is there anyone here tonight to speak on this item? If not, is there a
motion? Close the public hearing.
Second.
The move and second to close the public hearing. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passed unanimously. Is there a motion on the is it a resolution or an ordinance?
Move attachment A.
All right.
Second.
It's an attachment.
It's a resolution.
The resolution has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? The matter passed unanimously. We are on our second public hearing, a public hearing to obtain community input on town needs and budget for upcoming fiscal year 08-09. Mr. Manager, did you have a presentation on this? Or
no, this is okay. This is for the public.
All right. Well, I would... I'll begin by calling on Robert Down. Is Robert here?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Thought maybe we were moving faster than Robert expected.
Good evening. Good evening. This is my 11th annual appearance. For you all. to request funding for Orange Community Housing and Land Trust. As you know, we our work is growing. I gave a handout to you all. Hopefully you got it, which gives them an itemized budget. And essentially, our work is growing. We're doing more. We're doing more everywhere, and we're doing more in Carrboro. We have only 13 houses in Carrboro today. By the end of 08, we expect to have 22. And by the end of 09, we'll probably be about 30. So the work is growing. And the work is not just growing in numbers. The work is growing in terms of what we're doing. You'll remember I came to you last year to talk about our asset management issues, and a task force has been established to address those things. But we asked for funding last year, and we received it to hire a property manager. We're now getting into the property management business, something we haven't done in the past, and I've already learned that it's a new business for us. It's going to be interesting. So in the current fiscal year, you all appropriate $26,000 to the land trust. I've asked for an increase of $4,000 to $30,000. That is pretty much in line with the increase I've asked for from Town Chapel Hill and Orange County. It's a little bit less, actually, percentage-wise. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
Is there anybody else who did not sign up who would like to speak on budget priorities for the town of Carrboro for next fiscal year?
Good evening, all. I'm here as a new citizen of Carrboro, representing or this one of the strongest advocates for the Blue Ribbon Bike Project. And I'm here to suggest that Carrboro help in financing this program. We've, in the last year, I actually brought an annual report that maybe I should share with y'all at a later time because I've printed it on recycled paper. But in the last year, we've had five hubs open up in Chapel Hill, in the Chapel Hill area. As of this last week, we have two hubs open and two hubs to be opened imminently. We've had a hub at the Townsend and Bertram Company and also at excuse me. Not well prepared tonight. But anyway, the newer hubs are the IFC and Johnny's Sporting Goods. They're not up and running yet. This Friday, we're already on the next week, we're also opening a hub in Chapel Hill's Town Hall, which is the impetus for coming here tonight. I learned that y'all were having this meeting. And I wanted to suggest the idea that not only this would be a great location, fill in between Johnny's Sporting Goods and the IFC, but also that the program really could use the town's support, financial support. The idea, for folks that don't know the program, I should back up a minute, is that it's a bike share program. Folks that don't have a bicycle or coming in from out of town are able to borrow a bike. If they have a membership, membership is $10 a year or 2 hours of volunteer work. And with that membership card, they're able to borrow the bike for up to 24 hours, as many times as they want during that year. The bikes come with baskets, fenders, and lights. We have helmets available at some of the stations, but we, in our welcome to the program letter, we strongly advocate that everyone wear their own helmet. The program is insured, $2 million aggregate, through a local insurance company. What else? That's a really quick run through because I know there's a lot of folks and a lot on the agenda.
What kind of support are you looking for? Do you have a specific request?
I don't have a specific amount in mind. Last year,
what's involved in setting up the hub at Town Hall?
Not much, just the logistics of where they would be, mm-hmm. who would check the bikes out. Mm-hmm. It was suggested that the hub be here at the Town Hall, and perhaps the fire department could, since they're there probably more often, could be the ones checking in and out. That's real rough.
Okay. What's the operating cost approximately of your program?
Oh, that's a great question. And let me flip through this. It's been a busy day, and I didn't prepare this the way I should. However, from last year's budget, the operating From last year's budget, the operating cost was $4,636.
Rachel.
I think it's a great program. It's one that's been talked about for a long time. We're not making final budget decisions tonight, so if you like, you could send us a letter or an email with like the details in it, including the amount of the request that you're making to the town.
Yeah.
And life will be fine. Yeah.
In addition, if you could sketch out some of the components of a hub would be, so that staff would be able to look at that and get a sense of, you know, what the facilities needs would be regarding town hall.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much.
And congratulations. Cool.
Thank you all.
Thanks for
thanks for what you do. Great stuff.
Is there anybody else who wanted to speak on on budget priorities for 2008-2009, excuse me.
I know that Jay Bryan had sent an email to the Arts Commission.
Yes.
I don't see Jay here tonight, but I'd like to have that email entered into the record.
Okay.
And we've also had a request, although I don't have the numbers yet, for some kind of support for the Improv Festival, which happens here and is located at Dirty South, but also throughout the town and brings a whole lot of people and is becoming like a regional event. They're looking for any kind of contribution we'd like to make, kind of as a goodwill gesture, and something of $500 or something. I want that entered in for next year's budget, but I think they're also making a request for this year, so I'll bring that up at our next meeting as well, that maybe we can pull something from contingency to help with advertising for that. But okay. I know that they meant to have something at our tables tonight to be entered into this, so on their behalf, and I enter in that there'll be a request of some symbolic supportive amount to the Improv Festival.
Well, Jackie, I don't know if you saw your email this afternoon, but I'd asked Sarah to dig up the memo from the Arts Commission from a year ago about there were a number of things they were interested in at that time that I don't believe we did most of them. And I don't know if you want to talk to the committee about, you know, reviewing some of those and seeing if they want to put any of those forward again.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Anything else anybody wants to bring up at this time? If
move
not,
to close the public hearing.
We don't need a motion for that in this particular case, so we'll just move on to our third public hearing on an ordinance amending the Carborough Land Use Ordinance to authorize density bonus units for payments made in lieu of constructing affordable housing units. Mr. Manager.
Okay. This ordinance would allow payments to be accepted in lieu of constructing affordable housing units, and that's been prepared by staff. It's necessary for the board to receive public comment on changes to the text of the ordinance prior to taking any action, and Trish McGuire does have a presentation for the board prior to the public hearing. Trish.
Thank you. I'll do the paper version here. Thank you all. Good evening. Happy New Year. It's still January, right? 4 days. This text amendment is coming before the board and the public as a result of concerns that have been noted related to the ongoing maintenance costs of the affordable units that have been created over the past decade or so. And comments that we've heard in relation to recently approved housing units, affordable housing units in the downtown area, which includes Chapel Hill and Carborough, as I'm using it here. Folks from Robert, actually from the Orange Community Housing and Land Trust and others have suggested that payment in lieu be allowed in conjunction with the affordable housing density bonus. And when the board adopted changes to the affordable housing provisions of the ordinance last year, they dealt with the affordable housing goal and the affordable housing review requirement and developments that, in order to demonstrate they were meeting that requirement, the option of providing a payment in lieu under certain circumstances. The changes that were adopted in June last year did not encompass projects that were utilizing the affordable housing density bonus. And so this amendment is in response to comments that have come before you in the affordable housing review of some projects since then, since those changes were made. Just a little background on the density bonus. It was established in 1999 as part of the Northern Study Area Plan implementation. There have been 9 developments in the town's jurisdiction that have taken advantage of the bonus since that time. Most of the developments have maximized their density bonus, but at least one project has provided the affordable units but not incorporated their market rate units. And the overall impact of this provision in our ordinance is that 102 affordable housing units have been approved since 1999. I'd note that there are 2 projects that did not have any affordable housing, did not utilize the density bonus, two additional projects, sort of regular subdivisions, and then 6 other watershed and or exempt subdivisions were approved during that period of time. The ordinance provisions that are included in the draft ordinance you all have in front of you provide that a payment in lieu may be considered as providing an affordable housing unit under the density bonus provision of the ordinance. And you may recall that bonus, the way it's set up, is that it says if a developer provides a unit, they get an additional market rate unit. In this case, the language is a little bit different in that it sets up discretion on the part of the permit issuing authority to grant the opportunity for a developer to make a payment in lieu. So it isn't a right as the other language in this density bonus provision. Doesn't set up a right as that other language does. The ordinance also specifies that compliance with the 15% affordable housing policy goal can be met. This is clarification of the language that we did put before you in June. It addresses the timing of it, and it also allows that the calculation of the payment in lieu can be used toward calculating if a project has included 15% affordable within its project. The effect of these provisions is that a project could make a payment in lieu and basically substitute a market rate unit for that unit so that the overall density of the project could include the units permitted under the base units and all the units permitted under the density bonus. This would mean that the town would get basically an additional unit through the payment in lieu, or units, depending on what was accepted. The Planning Board has made a recommendation regarding the adoption of this ordinance, and the staff has done so as well. And I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
We do have 2 people signed up to speak. Why don't we go ahead and hear from them first, and then we'll get into a discussion. The first person signed up is Robert Dowling.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just quickly, I want to support the changes to the ordinance. I think it makes sense for you all to have that discretion. It's not a right for the developer, but it's your decision. If you think that the particular proposal makes sense to take the money instead of taking the unit, I think there are times, I know of times, when I think it would have been wiser, not necessarily in Carrboro, to take funds instead of taking units. That's number one. And number two, I just want to relate to you that an elected official last week said to me, no one here, Robert, when you talk about payment in lieu, some of us think that you only want funding because the land trust needs money. It took me a few days to think about that. And I don't know whose comment that was, the land trust needs money. Does that mean there's a personal gain involved in that? I give you a line item budget every year. You see how much money I make. I don't make a ton of money. I make enough. There's no personal gain. It's not that the land trust needs money. It's not that Robert needs money. It's that if this program is going to be successful, it needs money.
And the PS to that is it's not my program. Inclusionary housing is not the land trust's idea even. It's public policy. It was given to us. It wasn't asked. It was said, you will do this. And we do it. We try and do it as best we can. And so it's not the land trust that needs the money. It's the, if this is going to work in the long run, if we're going to produce housing that's really of value 10, 20, and 30 years from now, it will require investment or funding. And that's why I talk about it. And I just want to be clear about that. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I think the land trust has been around for so long that people may forget what the model is, and the model is that the local governments really are the owners of the land trust. It's not an independent entity. It's more like a WASA, right? We created it to fulfill policy goals. So
right. And the mayor was there at the outset before I was, and he can tell you probably more about that than mm-hmm. I could. But I look at this as we're doing what you have asked us to do. And unlike a WASA, I don't have rate-setting authority.
Well, you tell us who said that, and we'll go get them.
It wasn't an offensive thing. I just thought I've been sort of gestating back there, and mm-hmm. I realized, geez, I just want to be clear with people. This is not a money-making thing for me personally or for the land trust. Payment in lieu is all going to go into the housing to make it successful. That's what it's for.
Right. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our second speaker is Gary Cramley.
Good evening. I'm Gary Cramley. I'm a resident of Carrboro. I'm also a member of an organization called Friends of Affordable Housing, which advocates for more affordable housing in Orange County, as well as inclusionary zoning policies. I'm also here in support of this change to the ordinance. I think giving this board, this body, the flexibility to better meet the needs of the affordable housing community is a very good thing. I like that it's your responsibility, but you now have the flexibility to best meet the needs of Robert's organization as well as others. And what I would ask you consider also, respectfully ask that you consider a friendly amendment to this. In your packet, you have an attachment D1. This is attachment D1. In section 1554.1, paragraph B, it states that in a payment in lieu that's accepted is paid to the town's Affordable Housing Special Reserve Fund. I think that's fine. That's great. It's not currently a requirement that developers provide affordable housing as part of their developments or redevelopments. It's a policy goal of the town. And any developer who comes to town and wants to build here should recognize the values of the town and should participate. But this is money coming from a developer, and for that reason, I would like to see some discretion given to the developer in terms of where this money goes. Putting this money in the Affordable Housing Special Reserve Fund is fine, but other than OCHLT, we have other very progressive affordable housing providers in the area that also could use these funds. And by making an addition here where a developer could request that these funds go to one of these other providers, I think that gives the board even more options than just working with this one very worthy organization. So whether you would consider that amendment, or if you can't consider that, at least if the money's going to go to this reserve fund, if you could consider a request from a developer to specify the affordable housing provider that the fund should go to, I think that would meet the same need.
Hi, Darren. I just had one question. Do you have a problem if the board would be the person that designates where it goes as opposed to the developer?
I think in general that's what you're doing today, unless all funds are going to be going to OCHLT. Again, because I think the funds are coming from a developer, and developers have different ideas in terms of what they want to do in affordable housing and so forth, I think it would be nice to at least get feedback from a developer. Again, the decision is always going to be yours, but I would like to see there be some discretion that at least you could receive some input and have the authority to designate those funds for multiple affordable housing providers.
Yeah, that is the way it's set up. The disbursements from the fund are solely subject to the Board of Aldermen decision. So
I think as long as you could, you know, accept and receive requests, and then if it makes sense, honor those requests, I think that would be a worthy addition to this.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wanted to speak on this item? If not, board members. Jackie.
I don't have any problem with Gary's request. I mean, I think that we could. I wouldn't want developers to think that it was a
their decision.
Yeah. That we are the deciders. So I think it would be fine for us to take recommendations from developers. With the understanding that we have a broader view of what the needs are, and we'll take their recommendation into consideration, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we'll, in all cases, follow it.
I don't think we need to change the ordinance to accomplish that, because I think that's something
right.
that, you know, if the developer has a good idea, you know, we're free to hear that idea and agree with it or disagree with it, or anyone else in the community for that matter, if they come with an idea for how to use those funds.
The staff is nodding in agreement with that.
I think the ordinance provides that kind of flexibility to the board. The main thing we want to make sure of is the special fund needs to be set up, because we need to be, we are accountable for those funds, and it needs to flow through directly through the town, and the board has the authority to appropriate as it sees fit. It doesn't have to be the land trust. It could be some other organization.
Okay.
Right. That makes sense.
All right. Well, with that as a philosophical background, what's our
do we need to close the public hearing?
I don't think we need a formal motion on that.
Okay.
So the appropriate motion would probably be for the statement of explanation.
Yeah, pass for nay. I'll move that.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded for attachment A. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Is there a motion for attachment
C?
Let's see. C1, is that? There's some heavy contemplation of our actions on attachment A.
That's right. No, it does. Lydia's pointing out that there's actually what appears to be an error in the way that item is written. If folks will look at Section 2, there's language to do with our needing to provide a high level of fire service, which seems inappropriate, and perhaps we need to just strike that Section 2, and Section 1 would be sufficient.
No doubt that we do, but it's probably not not relevant to this particular motion.
Do you want to say
omitting
Section 2? I think we should delete Section 2. All right, so I'll take that as a motion for reconsideration. Is there a second for the motion?
Second. Maybe we should keep Section 2, but just strike out because the town seeks to provide a high level of fire service for its
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. We reconsider. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously. Joel, is there any motion?
We're having a little confusion over here.
Okay.
We're not reading from the same text as you, I don't think.
Maybe not, but attachment A, mine says at the bottom.
The last line says, because the town seeks to provide a high
attachment
level.
Attachment A.
A. Yes, A.
Oh. Attachment C.
No, 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 no.
We're still on A.
And I'm we just had a motion for reconsideration because we mistakenly passed attachment
right.
A.
Right.
Gotcha.
I was just saying that we just strike out because all the way from because for the rest of it just includes
reasonable
the
people. Okay. And in the public interest.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
I'll
second.
Public
second
interest.
So moved by Joel Hall Brown and seconded by Dan Coleman. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. See, it's great to have another lawyer on the board. Is there a motion for attachment C1?
There we go.
So moved.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Lydia, are there any typos?
No, that's all.
All right. It's been moved and seconded for attachment C1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much. All right. We're on agenda item A4.
Sorry about that one.
Public hearing for Emergency Square Mixed-Use Building.
We still believe in the high level of fire.
I'm sure you do, and obviously staff does. The wonders of word processing sometimes.
Indeed.
We're in that drive mode.
So high is the level of our commitment.
Yes. We want to mention it every chance we get.
Okay.
Well, Marty's at the podium. This is the public hearing on the conditional use permit request for the Roberson Square mixed-use building. Darcon of North Carolina LLC has submitted an application for a CUP to allow for the construction of a 5-story mixed-use building at 203 South Greensboro Street on the site where Andrew Rigsby Hardware Store formerly operated. Prior to reaching a decision on a request for the CUP, the Board of Aldermen must hold a public hearing to receive input. Town staff recommends that the board hold a public hearing and consider issuing the conditional use permit. Marty?
I think before we get started, it might be a good idea to remind folks, because there are a lot of people here interested in this, that when we have large items before us, we do not vote that night. And so we most likely will not be voting on this until the date of our next public hearing, which is probably the 26th of February. And that also means that a lot of the board discussion will happen on the 26th rather than tonight.
Well, we may have some discussion tonight and then
but not
get more
in
information
that, yeah.
On the night.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. As the manager mentioned, the name of the project is the Roberson Square Mixed-Use Building. It's a conditional use permit request. Most everyone's probably familiar with the site, but just to quickly point out, here's the intersection of Main Street and Greensboro Street. Just down one block or half a block is where the Andrew Rigsby Hardware Store used to be located at 203 South Greensboro or 100 Roberson Street. I'm going to run down some bullet points. Before I talk in any detail about a bullet point, I want to just kind of walk you through the site and talk a little bit about the project. It's approximately 0.88 acres on the corner, surrounded by streets on the corner of Roberson, South Greensboro, East Carr, and the Maple Avenue extension to the east. Proposed are sidewalks around each side, 10-foot sidewalks on South Greensboro and on Roberson Street, and then a bit smaller sidewalk on the Maple Avenue extension, stopping just before the entryway to underground parking level, and then a smaller sidewalk along Carr Street as well. Outlined in white is kind of the footprint of the building, and as you see, there's an interior courtyard space. It's a mixture of hardscape and a green, landscaping and green space also. Has a lawn area out front along facing South Greensboro Street and a main entryway on South Greensboro, as well as entryways along Roberson. One smaller entryway on the Maple Avenue extension, and then a main entryway into the courtyard along East Carr Street. And I have a couple of other slides to show you, but I want to back up and just run through some bullet points. My presentation shouldn't go too long. The applicant will follow with a longer presentation of the architectural features of the project. As I mentioned, it's about 0.88 acres. It's zoned B1G, that's Business 1 General. It's also covered by the Downtown Neighborhood Protection Overlay District. It's a five-story mixed-use building with a total of 91,575 square feet, mixture of retail, office, and residential. Total of 18 units are proposed. 12 units is the base density based on the amount of land here, and they are proposing to maximize the affordable housing density bonus for a total of 18 units, with three of the units being affordable. That's about 16.7%. That would meet the town's ordinance's affordability definition. There's also a CUP condition. This will be the first one of these that we've dealt with that establishes a 1% transfer fee related to the affordable units, and the applicant and Mr. Dowling can speak further to that if necessary. And as you just passed the payment in lieu option related to affordable units, the applicant may wish to discuss that with you. They were aware that that would be contemplated tonight, so I don't know if they're going to speak to you in any level of detail, but they may want to talk to you about that. Commercial space on the first two floors. The bottom would be all retail with the possible inclusion of restaurants. I'm sure we'll talk about that some later. And the top three floors would be all residential space. A few months back, I guess it was last June, I believe, we added downtown livability and urban livability standards to the ordinance. The project does meet that. They're above 20% downtown livability area, mainly met by the courtyard and the lawn out front. They're also providing $168,000 worth of urban livability area. That is mainly the fee you see, or the amount of money you see, is comprised of the courtyard area built over a structured parking deck. Only $21,634 was required for the project, so obviously they're exceeding that. The clubhouse within the building is worth 170 recreation points, and the staff is recommending similar to the way the board handled a different project a few months ago, that clubhouse act as children's facilities in this case, but the board may wish to discuss that, but the staff is recommending that that count as toward their children's facilities. Moving on to transportation and parking, the presumptive parking requirement is, excuse me, that should say 104. There's another typo. 104 spaces plus a small unknown amount related to home occupations that's further described in one of the attachments in your package. Provided on site are 65 parking spaces. As I mentioned quickly earlier, it's all contained within an underground parking layer beneath the building. There's also proposed as part of the project the creation of seven on-street spaces along Roberson Street, space also for 8 motorcycles and 19 bicycle spaces. Staff is recommending, and I'm sure we'll talk about this at more length, a condition that requires the provision of satellite parking spaces off-site prior to occupying the building, essentially to bring the amount of parking intended to serve this building up from the 65 provided on-site. And again, I imagine we'll come back and talk about that at some length. The applicant is aware of, that the board will likely want to discuss parking, and they welcome further discussion of that during the public hearing. I briefly showed the 10-foot sidewalk along Roberson Street. The plan does comply with the Roberson Street right-of-way plan adopted by the board a few years back. That includes the provision of the 10-foot sidewalk, a 5-foot landscaping area, and then the on-street parking spaces, and then one travel lane east and west. Right-of-way dedications. There are multiple right-of-way dedications required here to get the project up to 5 stories as designed. To be permitted by ordinance, they have to essentially have any adjacent right-of-way be greater than 50 feet. And as this slide shows, they're having to dedicate a fair amount of land. The big, bold black line represents the existing property line, and the interior dashed line recommends the amount of dedication. The one along Greensboro is just illustrative. The Greensboro right-of-way, as the plat show, is exactly 50 feet, so they would have to dedicate at least an inch to get above 50 feet. Loading zone along Maple Avenue and possibly the Roberson Street extension. Right along this side. That's the northeast corner of the property. They have designed in a loading zone, specifically intended to be a loading zone, and then are asking, or basically put a request before the town to have a secondary loading zone along Roberson Street during certain limited hours when parking would presumably not be high demand along that street. And the staff is recommending that, you know, we basically consider the information and recommend that that would possibly be a town code amendment at some future date between the staff and the Board of Aldermen, that, you know, basically we want to see the building on the ground and see how the parking, I mean, everyone probably knows that's a pretty busy place. There's a coffee shop in the area, and we're not entirely sure of whether that's a plausible thing or not, so we're not recommending that it be done right now. Left turn lanes. There is a left turn lane intended to serve Roberson Street from Greensboro onto Roberson. Also contemplated during the review was the possibility of a left turn lane from Roberson exiting onto South Greensboro Street. And the design essentially would allow for that left turn lane if the on-street parking were not there. So the staff is recommending that that left turn lane not be done at this time, but that if it is found to be necessary at some future date, essentially the on-street parking would go away in favor of the, you know, restripe that area and we would have a left turn lane in place. Just a few more things. There's a request for a flexible screening along Maple Avenue Extension. As I've already talked about a little bit, there's a loading zone back here and a smaller sidewalk, and then you reach the face of the building. Prescriptive requirement of the ordinance is that a Type C screen be in place between the building and the street here, but as you see, there's not any nowhere to put it necessarily, so they're asking that they be relieved from that requirement along that one street. They are satisfying through provision of street trees and some landscaping out here and some street trees along here. They're satisfying all the other requirements related to landscaping. Just to quickly note, the project is regulated under the former stormwater regulations. When the town changed the ordinance a while back, certain projects that were in the pipeline already were exempted from the new requirements. So this is regulated under the former. And there are some minor engineering issues, but they have been deferred to the construction plan stage. No lights are proposed at this time. I believe later on the agenda tonight there's an item related to lighting, and the applicant found it difficult to meet the requirements as they're currently on the books, so they essentially pulled lighting from the plan and may come back at some later date and ask for lights to be added to the building. And we've written a condition accordingly that would require that it come back and, you know, be judged and approved by the board as a minor modification, presumably. I mentioned earlier the downtown neighborhood protection overlay zone. I'm going to cover the last two bullet points at the same time, talk a little bit about architecture and design, and then leave the rest to the architect. But just to, well, I spoke about landscaping. Here's a quick slide of the landscaping plan. Lots of vegetation out here, and then the street trees on either side, and then some interior landscaping as well. Right-of-way dedication we looked at. This is the one I want. Thank you for your patience. This illustrates how they're meeting the downtown neighborhood protection overlay zone. Essentially, for the first 50 feet of the property, they're only able to go up two stories and then a third story after a 10-foot step back, as you see here. And then at the 50-foot line, they can go up to the fourth story, step back 10 feet from there, and go to the fifth story. So what you see here is essentially the DMP overlay zone because of the existing residential area across the street. And just to quickly move along through the renderings we have here, again, the architect has a much more detailed presentation. This is the north elevation along Roberson Street. South elevation along Carr Street, which again illustrates the DMP at the three-story level. And then what you see back behind in white is 50 feet back from the right-of-way line along Carr Street. I believe I mentioned earlier, but just to quickly show you in this form, parking below grade, retail on the first floor, office on the second, and residential from there all the way up to the fifth floor. And I won't go over the every single one of these, but they are here for reference, and you have them in your packet. And with that, I also have the advisory board recommendations. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, or again, the architect I know does want to make a presentation.
I actually have just a couple of questions. Have we had previously a reduction in parking you referred to? Were you talking about the Albemarle project? I'm trying
Alberta.
To
remember. Alberta.
Alberta. Okay. Albemarle. Alberta. Close. I had an A-L.
Alba whatever.
Alba something or other. And then if somebody on staff can recall, and you don't have to answer this because it may take you a little research, like 10 minutes, or tell me for the next meeting, was the parking reduced in Pacifica, or were there any limits placed on the number of parking for the Pacifica project a couple of years ago?
Okay, so the first question pertains to the Alberta and then the second to Pacifica.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just off the top of my head, I believe the Alberta actually met their parking requirement. I know the architect for that project typically presents a 1-300 downtown standard ratio for parking, and I'm a little unsure off the top of my head if he had presented that as a 1-300 standard and asked for a slight reduction. My hunch is that they actually met their parking requirement. If you recall, that parking lot serves two pieces of property,
right,
the Carmel
right.
complex
right.
and that site, and I think they actually, it's one of the few pieces of property in the downtown that has quite a bit of parking.
Okay.
So I'm a little unsure. I'm sorry. I'm not giving you a clear answer.
If I recall, the Alberta application actually only applied to essentially a part of that property because they wanted to
located.
Leave the rest. You know, they had so much parking that
right.
they wanted to not
right.
have the entire, essentially not have the entire property
right.
encumbered by that permit.
And Pacifica, yeah, I'm not sure off the top of my head.
If you could just bring that back when we revisit this, that would be very helpful to me.
Pacifica okay. needed to go back and add parking. It came back around,
okay.
if you
remember. They did.
Okay, if you could just provide that.
Yeah, let's check the numbers on Pacifica.
Yeah, in writing, because that may happen.
Jackie.
Also, for the meeting next month, I'd like a copy of the noise ordinance, particularly the construction, the part that pertains to the hours of construction.
Okay. I'm sure the applicant has a presentation if the board's ready, and we also have
sure.
a number of people signed up. There are some others here tonight who haven't signed up. So, Mr. Ripperton, or
from the evidence you're about to give the truth to the best of your knowledge.
I do.
Good evening. I'm representing Darkon, as Marty said. We're proposing the five-story mixed-use building with the underground parking. And I believe we have the burden of proof on our shoulders to show that this project is not going to adversely affect the town. And there were four main points. One was public safety, property values, harmony, and conformity to the town's long-range goals. So I think I'd like to lead off with Jason Hamilton from Ramey Camp to talk about traffic. And actually, before he comes up, the people that are representing us are Jason Hamilton from Ramey Camp for Public Safety and Steve Addy, also from SGI Engineers. I'm not sure if he's here. Okay. Property Values, Paul Snow, Analytical Consultants. Harmony and Conformity, I'll do that. And for legal issues, we have Julia Young from Burns Day and Presnell Attorneys. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Jason Hamilton.
Could all of y'all come up, since all of you may or probably will speak at some point, could all of y'all come up at once and just get sworn real quick? I reckon the attorney, we know attorneys don't tell the truth, so.
Okay. Come right on the side, maybe. If we could swear all of you in at once, that would be so good. You can kind of lean in and put your hand on the Bible, that would be great.
She's got to be sworn.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
I'm Jason Hamilton. I'm a registered professional engineer and traffic engineer with Ramey Camp & Associates in Raleigh. We were hired to conduct a traffic impact analysis for the site. In doing that, we worked a scope out with DOT and town initially, identified four key off-site intersections to study, being Greensboro Street at Main Street, Carr Street, and Roberson Street, as well as the Main Street and Sweet Bay Place, Weaver Street intersection. We conducted traffic counts, AM and PM peak hours, and analyzed existing conditions. We then analyzed what we consider background conditions, being site build-out year with some traffic growth, as well as traffic associated with adjacent approved developments, those being the Main Street, 300 East Main Street development, which, in fact, when we did the study, we included approximately 450,000 square feet of development there, which I think was initially proposed. I understand it's since been scaled back quite a bit. So I think it's a conservative approach that we included a lot more traffic. It's probably what's going to be associated with that. We then generated traffic for our site. The site is projected to generate approximately 1,000, a little over 1,000 trips a day, which is, we kind of consider a conservative approach with this mixed-use site. Generally, with mixed-use, you have some shared internal trips, someone that lives in an apartment that works in the office space or lives in the apartment and shops in the retail. You usually can take a reduction in your trips for that, which we did not, just to kind of take a conservative approach here. Also for this site, the location, in my mind, would yield itself to some non-motorized traffic, bicyclists, pedestrians. We didn't take a reduction for that either. So we used a very conservative approach here and put as much traffic on the road as possible with trip generation. Then analyzed the intersections based on future conditions. I guess bottom line, my opinion in doing the analysis is that the site, in terms of traffic impact, will have a fairly minor impact to operations of the intersections. Slight increases in delay could be experienced at some of the unsignalized intersections. Minimal impact at the signalized intersection at Main Street and Greensboro Street. So like I said, it's a fairly small site in terms of trip generation. And welcome any questions if anyone has any questions.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
The next speaker will be Paul Snow from Analytical Consultants.
Good
Analytical Consultants is a real estate appraisal firm. We do mostly commercial valuation, but we also do impact studies that would investigate property values being potentially negatively impacted by something like this. And that's what we were asked to do, was just to look at the potential for negative impact to property values resulting from the development. The first thing that we looked at was the existing improvements. You'd hate to think that something that was important to the community was removed. And I feel like in this case that wasn't an issue. It was an older building that was not maybe going to be rehabbed and, you know, used for something else. The development patterns in downtown Carrboro, we also investigated to see if there might be a potential for negative impact there. It's already a commercial zoned area, and Carrboro, generally speaking, it seems to be what the community wants is, you know, mixed use livable projects in the downtown. And certainly I think that they've reinforced that by allowing five-story development. The other projects, which just, you know, we investigated those as well, such as the Alberta, which is down the street from that, which shares a similar architecture, which tries to blend those projects into the existing storefronts along Main Street and Greensboro Street. The specific project characteristics, as you've already have been discussed, have a design which is intended to, of course, as I said, blend them into the existing improvements. The construction quality of the project appears to be very good, and as we've already noted, moving back from the residential areas, the project will begin at lower levels and move upwards so that it's not, you know, looming over the edge of the B1G zone. The site itself, the traffic pattern analysis, of course, was more in-depth than what we did, but we looked at where potentially, you know, excess traffic could be generated on residential streets. As far as most of the streets involved with this, they're already impacted by enough traffic where additional traffic is not going to create a negative impact and value. It's very, from a just practical standpoint, very difficult to show a negative impact in value when there's already a significant amount of traffic flow on streets. Maple Avenue, moving south of the project, doesn't seem like any traffic would go down Maple Street very much because there's just, you know, it's not really a egress from the property, and that's the only street there that doesn't really carry any traffic count right now. As far as the parking goes, there is a reduction in spaces which may not appeal to certain buyers of the apartment units or certain office buyers, but it does tend to encourage occupancy by less car-dependent residents and companies, which tends to reduce noise and pollution. The unloading and loading zones are also situated in a way so that they minimize the impact, and most of the businesses face into the courtyard so that it's an inwardly facing project, which is also helpful in that regard. So, I mean, we're assuming that the tenant mix of the property would be something that was community friendly and made sense. As far as the occupancy of the project, I mean, it's a higher end construction. Overall, based on all the things that we looked at, we couldn't find anything that led us to believe, looking at this and similar projects, that there'd be a negative impact on property values experienced. So I'm happy to answer any questions, but that's the long and the short of it.
All right.
Thank you.
The next speaker will be Steve Addy from SGI Engineers, who will also talk about public safety and water issues.
I think the public safety is a typo. I think Dave asked me to say something about stormwater runoff on this site. In brief, it's a wash. There'll be increased impervious surface due to the pavement and sidewalk improvements, but Dave's worked hard to cut the impervious surface on the site to offset any increases. There will be a small cistern underground on the site to collect small amounts of roof runoff to use for irrigation. And at this point, the focus is primarily to deal with the town engineers and DOT to try to improve the runoff control on the streets, the four streets around the site. If there's any questions. Thank you.
All right. The next two issues are harmony and conformity to the town's long-range plans, and I'll be speaking about that. I think we started this project about 4 years ago, and at that time I took some photographs of going from the Carmel Mall property down to the Andrews Rigsby Hardware Store, and I just noted a few things that I thought would be nice to have in the project to make it consistent with what was already here. And at Harris Teeter, I think I, and at the Carmel Mall building, the arches were appealing, kind of the asymmetry and the tower effect on the mill building. Pedestrian-friendly space at the Weaver Street Market. And then going down farther, some more asymmetry on the Century Center and the projecting towers again. And the predominant use of brick. So those are all the elements that I thought that I would use in the design of the building to reinforce a sense of conformity to what was already here. Now, I've got a couple models I'll show you. I think some of you have already seen this first one. I'll take just a minute. Okay, this is the site plan from the air, Robertson Street. And actually, there are 8 on-street parking spaces. We had considered a zip car, so we backed out one, but I think in meeting with the planning staff that we've kind of backed off on that, and we're just going to provide the 8 spaces. Greensboro Street, Carr Street, Maple Avenue, and then here's the courtyard and then the green space in the front. Here we are along Greensboro Street. This is the main entry, one of the main entries into the site. This is all retail down here. This is all covered. And then along the interior, almost the entire interior of the courtyard is has a walkway, covered walkway. And you can see the predominant use of the brick, the arches, and then I think we changed this to use stucco on the upper level just to help the scale of the building to minimize it a little bit. Then we switch around onto Carr Street. In the DMP, we can only go, I believe, 80 feet before we have to break 30 feet. So we really celebrated that division there and made a real focal point from the residential area. And if you can look, if you see on these levels here, we've stepped the building back a little bit more just to give it a little more space as you come into it. And I know we're not allowed to
to project past the DMP line, but what we'd like to do is add maybe some shading devices. So I've just shown one here. But I think we probably need a variance on that, Marty.
We discussed that with the attorney, and the ordinance currently allows projections of that sort when they are supporting signage, and it also allows it just as an architectural feature as long as it's 7 feet. Help me, Bob. There's a maximum extension outwards as well, correct? Just don't recall what the number is. It's in the staff report. We can get the exact number if you need it, but it is allowed by the town code.
And moving along onto Maple Avenue, this is our solid waste area. We have private pickup for the dumpsters, and Orange County is going to pick up the recycling. And the plan has been reviewed by the Orange County Solid Waste Management, and they've approved it. This is the drive down into the underground parking. This is covered bicycle parking, and actually we have 25 spaces altogether. There's some that were noted along Carr Street, and I think I didn't label them. I showed the spaces, but I didn't label them. This is the loading zone. Let me move around onto Roberson Avenue. And then here we also have some projections to accentuate the entryway into the retail spaces. And this is the main entrance into the courtyard. And here I tried to, that asymmetrical look, I tried doing that here. We couldn't project out as far as I'd like, but, you know, that was the intent there. These are the 8 spaces. This is a view of the front entryway. Close up of the entry from Carr Street into the plaza level. This will all be landscaped down here. One early meeting, David Poitras of Public Works suggested on-street parking, but I think there was a resistance from the neighbors, and so we omitted it. But I think we could have gotten around 10 spaces there. 10. This is the plaza level. These are all retail spaces along here, landscaping, and then this goes all the way through to Roberson. It's open. And the site will be accessible. This is a ramp leading up into the plaza level. There's a ramp around the front entry off of Greensboro, and the other two sides are pretty much at grade level as you enter. This is solid waste area again, entry to the underground parking. This is the entry into the courtyard from Maple, close up. Street level along Roberson. This was the town's new right-of-way. 5 feet of landscaping and then 10 feet of sidewalk. And the main entry from Roberson. Then walking into the courtyard, going in a little bit farther, and here's the colonnade, covered colonnade. So most of the retail spaces will have covered entry, in fact, all of them. Another view. And another view of the courtyard. So that's the clean version. So what I did is I took the model and I put it into Google Earth. And there we are. Here's Greensboro, Roberson, Carr, and Maple. And what I did is I outlined some of the adjacent buildings and I elevated them up so you can see them as in 3D to give you a better sense of what's going on there. And I had done some houses for the Orange County Housing and Land Trust, which were the typical mill houses, so I just made one model and I popped it into. So these are the four mill houses along Carr Street. There's another one here, it's not quite that configuration, and then there's another house here. And then the Orange County Rescue Squad. And then the Alberta's gonna go here. I think it's indented in the sides, but I just made it a block. And moving around. You can see the Century Center in the background. I think that's a bank building there. The old post office. This is our loading zone here. Empty lot here. Just rotate it around and let it speak for itself now. I think I put it in a little skewed. It's not quite correct. But for this purpose, I think it's good enough. We're going down at street level and you'll notice the front is floating a little bit. In Google Earth, they actually have the contours. So what I did is I set the building in the back at grade level, so it's actually coming down a little bit. So we're just moving up onto the deck level for some of the views from the deck. There you are, looking down at the mill houses. And coming back up onto the Greensboro Street side. These are all deck levels from the DNP step back. This is our main courtyard area. There's a happy guy up on the roof deck there. The funny thing when you rotate this, he never changes. keeps looking at me. Just kind of weird.
Is it Mike Nelson?
I don't know. There's the colonnade area. And then right here in the middle, there are two elevators that come up vertically from the parking level. And we would like to utilize the decks for landscaping. I know it's kind of difficult in this climate because it gets so hot in the summertime, but I showed this photograph in one meeting before, but this is a building in London where they really utilize that. It would be nice, but I don't know that we could get that much. But anyway, wishful thinking. These are just some more views from the deck. And this is a view looking down Roberson, looking east. The rescue squad in the Alberta. So really the landscape, the built environment is going to change quite a bit in the next 10 years, I think. There'll be quite a few taller buildings. And we're back down to the entry on Roberson. And zooming out past the open eye. Century Center. And rotating around, looking south. And back to the site plan. So that's the harmony issue, I believe. I like to think that it's harmonious with what's here. It's bigger. But I think the developers are going to pretty big expense to provide the courtyard in the middle. We could have jammed everything together and gotten more parking spaces. And this shows an earlier version where we actually had parking at street level. And then if you added those 22 and 10 at the street along Carr and then 65 down below, puts us up there pretty well, but I think what they're doing is providing the courtyard, which to me, long term, is a pretty valuable asset for the town, and it's consistent with what you have here already at the Weaver Street area. Conformity to the town's long-range plans is the last issue. Item. And what I did was I looked at the downtown Carrboro New Vision document, which was 2001. And this was a list of ranked priorities. And the number of people who voted for them. So it looks like building height was first, some 4 and 5 story. Traffic And what I've highlighted in yellow are things that I think we have in our project. Under traffic, there was nothing mentioned about additional parking spaces, which kind of surprised me. Green space, mixed-use buildings, gathering places, underground parking's in there, shade trees. I think we're providing 36 new trees and 111 shrubs. We're providing additional biking connectivity. All those issues, I think, we're addressing. And one last item in the new vision document. I'd just like to read these. It says, however, it is also necessary to keep the big picture in mind and anticipate negative consequences. For example, policies requiring a set number of parking spaces per business or building may unnecessarily restrict mixed-use development or prompt a mom-and-pop business to locate in a shopping mall. And then going down a little bit farther, they're suggesting that town leaders should work with TTA to extend the rail service, which is a good idea, and then also to invest in public parking garages. This was done in 2001. And I know the big issue with our site is parking, which most people here have come to talk about. But I would like to show you one thing before they start speaking. The first item we're providing 65 spaces in the garage. 29 are allocated for the apartments and 36 are for others. And we have some non-credited spaces, the 8 on street, one additional motorcycle, four, the equivalent to 4 bike racks. If we include 2 restaurants of about 2,000 square feet each, the total parking requirement is 104. If we take those out and just say that we're going to have a restaurant, but it's going to be an accessory use, it goes down to 75, which is a big step down. I think what the owners would like to do, I mean, we would like to have the lower number and still have the restaurants, but I don't think that would be approved. But the requirement is a presumptive requirement. And some of the reasons that we're not providing all those, well, one is we have soil borings, and we can't go down any farther for our parking, so we're kind of limited there. And we did make, we're giving that courtyard in lieu of the parking, which to me is a better option than putting the parking up on that level. So, you know, it's a give and take, and what I'm suggesting is that what we're giving is much better than if we had provided all those spaces on site. Some of the reasons why that I believe we could get by with the fewer spaces, we're near the bus lines, we're within walking distance of Harris Teeter and the CVS Pharmacy. We have a combination of the uses so people can live and work in the same place. We have new sidewalks, a reduction in the actual auto traffic from what would be required versus what we're providing, courtyard. And the two restaurants that we've talked about really are going to be delis and sandwich shops with peak hours from about 11 to 1. Donuts, coffee, no cooking, just plate preparation. All the ingredients will be delivered and cooked, baked, or baked outside. And that can be written into the approval. So that's why I think the number of spaces could be fewer than what's required. We will agree to what the Board of Aldermen stipulates as our requirement for parking. What we'd like to do is reserve the right to reappear. If we don't sell the units as a restaurant, we'd like to come back and convert them to retail. We'd like that option. So that's my presentation. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
David, does the design as currently laid out, would that still accommodate those 10 parking spaces on Carr Street? Like, I guess, in lieu of the landscaping?
Well, we probably would have to give up a little bit of the landscaping. We have to, it's a 40-foot right-of-way now. We have to dedicate 10 feet. Mm-hmm. So I believe we could probably squeeze it in, maybe not as much landscaping. We have to give, I think we're proposing 5 feet of sidewalk there, too. Mm-hmm. So it might be a little difficult with the sidewalk and the parking.
Actually, I have a question for Bob. My reason for his presentation.
Okay. I'm sure at some point we'll have some more questions for you, but
sure.
We do also have some people signed up.
So. And I can wait and hold my question until I wrote it down, so I can wait until
she's good about
the other people have been waiting a longer time. So I can just, I have a little note so I can,
fine.
I can wait.
Well, let me turn to those who've signed up to speak. On this matter. Thank you, David. Robert Dowling and after that will be Gary Cramling. And Gary and Robert, why don't you both come up at the same time and get sworn at the same time.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not here to talk at all about the merits of this project. I'm just here to talk about their affordable housing components, which we talked about back in fall. The applicant heard your concerns back then about the transfer payment. They've agreed to provide the transfer fee. And the transfer fee will really help us, the affordable housing units, of which there are three, remain affordable and well-maintained in perpetuity. The ordinance requires that they sell the property to people earning 80% or below of median income. One-bedroom units will sell to a one-person household. Our projections are that the selling price will be $75,000. That's affordable right at 80%. So in order for us to sell it, we have to put subsidy in order to have a window of people we can sell it to. And we're showing $25,000 of subsidy, which brings it down to about 68% of median. So our window of buyers is between 68 and 80%. So that's $25,000 for three units, $75,000 total. To make the deal work, we would go out and get that subsidy from bond funds, home funds, NCHFA, the Housing Finance Agency in Raleigh. And then the transfer fee would make those units, keep those units affordable forever. So I think the affordable housing does work better than now that we have the transfer fee. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Good evening again. It's really exciting being here as you contemplate the third mixed-use building for downtown Carrboro that we've seen in the last year. That's no accident. I think these buildings come directly from the citizens in that through the Vision 2020 statement, they spelled out specifically what type of development they wanted for their downtown. And I think these buildings go a long way towards satisfying that requirement. In addition, this board has very wisely made changes to the land use ordinance in terms of increased density, changing the open space requirement to an urban amenities and downtown livability area requirement, and also the downtown overlay district. I think all these changes have contributed toward the number of buildings that we've seen come before you, and I think there are more to come. Having said that, with this building, there's a clear lack of parking as it relates to the presumed parking requirement. My calculation shows roughly 63% of the presumed parking requirement is being met, which is certainly a concern. It's a congested area of town now, and with this new building, on the surface, there'll actually be less parking than there is today because the Maple Street extension will no longer allow parking once this new building is put up. Having said this, this building isn't unique in that regard. Future mixed-use projects that are put on a single parcel that you're going to be reviewing in the future are going to run into a lot of the same difficulties that this applicant has run into. These difficulties aren't unique to this parcel or unique to this building. Maximizing the density in these buildings, in order to do that, the parking requirement does go up significantly, and certainly the restaurant space adds a whole lot to that, although we certainly value our restaurant spaces in town. So the reason I mention this is because I'd like, as this board considers this building, to not consider it in an isolated way, but consider the future buildings that are coming, that they are going to have very similar requirements, and that as you consider maybe amending policy, that you do it in a way that will be representative of not just this building, but future buildings that you consider. In 2006, this board received a report from an organization called RTS, which was an economic development report. And one of their findings was that the development review process in Carrboro is often long and inconsistent. Inconsistent is what I want to focus on tonight. By considering these types of things at the last minute and making a whole lot of exceptions for any one project, it adds a lot of unpredictability and risk to these projects. I would ask, as you deliberate on this, that you consider doing it in a way where, if the land use ordinance needs to be modified in order to support this building, that it be done such that also future buildings won't have the difficulty that this one has had. And finally, I wanted to make mention of the fact that for this building, this developer is dedicating, I believe, about 14% of their land. So they're a landowner, and they're dedicating 14% of their land approximately to the town for sidewalks and planting areas. And because of the new Roberson right-of-way plan, they also have to dedicate additional land area for this on-street parking on Roberson Street to make use of those 8 spaces. Because this is a landowner and they're dedicating this to the town and they're paying to improve these spaces, I think it's only right and just that this applicant be given credit for those 8 spaces they're providing on Roberson Street. To not give them credit for that, and I understand the land use ordinance as currently written does not support that, but I think that's misguided, and I ask you to reconsider. Thank you.
Thanks, Your. I've next got signed up Buddy Kelly and then Daniel Amoni and Jennifer McMillan. And again, if the three of you could come up together maybe and get sworn real quick, it'd be helpful.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
All right, Buddy, you're up first.
I'm Buddy Kelly. I'm the owner and occupant of the house on 102 East Carr Street. I've owned it for about 10 years and have lived there for about 3 years. I have 2 children, 6 and 10, who live with me half the time. I try to be a good neighbor and citizen. That's why I'm here, voice my concerns. In my opinion, well, I've lived there 3 years. In my opinion, the owners don't have a real good track record of maintaining their property. I've had to live through the, the eyesore nuisance of a vacant building there, a sweet crash pad for the homeless with its broken windows and trash-strewn rear lot. Then we had to endure the dismantling of the building every Saturday and Sunday for probably 3 months. It's not a real pleasant experience to be awoken every weekend morning by the crashing of I-beams to the pavement. Most recently, we've gotten to witness predatory towing practice by T-Roy's, I guess in cahoots with the owners, because the property's never really been fenced off unless you count the rotting cable spool out in front. And there's a huge pile of asphalt that's been dumped there, hundreds of floor tiles been left there that make perfect breeding pools for mosquitoes. You know, right now I don't know who to hold in contempt more, the owners of the property for their, I don't know, disrespect to the neighbors, or the town for not being more proactive in the quality of life issues. But enough of the past, let's look to the future. The owners are here trying to get permission to improve their property. Good on you. I'm all for that. Anything's better than a trash-strewn vacant lot. My concern is every night I put my kids to sleep on their pillow, they're probably no more than 30 yards away from the project in question. I'm not real sure, having to live through the construction that's probably going to happen there, but somehow I think the town needs to maybe step up and protect the rights of the neighbors to enjoy, you know, our homes and property without having to live through a year of, I'm sure it's going to be a year or whatever of the construction. And another concern of mine is the parking. I mean, people already park on Carr Street Friday and Saturday nights to go to the bars and restaurants. And with the Alberta going in down the street, I think we're headed to a real traffic and parking nightmare or meltdown there. So, but that's my concerns, and I appreciate you hearing them.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Daniel.
Hi, I'm Daniel Moni. I'm on the Transportation Board, and I also live really close to the development, but I'm here mainly to just give a report about what we discussed on the Transportation Board regarding this property. We spent over an hour talking about parking because we had a joint review meeting where some concerns were voiced about parking pretty loudly, and we're pretty aware of that problem. We just didn't really know exactly how to address it, so our solution wasn't anything real analytical or quantitative, but I'll just read what our recommendation, it's not a solution, but it's a recommendation to the board here. I just thought I'd read it to you all. It's based on the uses indicated at the January 17th Transportation Board meeting, the applicant provides a total of 80 automobile parking spaces for which the on-street parking can count towards the total. The applicant must find a means of providing any deficit unless the town provides a plan for the applicant to pay in lieu. Motorcycle spaces should not be counted in these calculations. And I'll just explain that a little bit. When Dave Ripperton presented this to us at our last meeting last week, the plan that he currently showed us did not have a restaurant. I'm not sure if it was the restaurant as accessory as he presented tonight, but the total parking spaces that he had listed were 86, I believe. And what he did was he made an argument that the 86 spaces that are the presumptive, I guess it's not a requirement, but is it a suggestion or we're not even really clear?
It's the presumptive standard.
Standard, okay, it's a standard. His argument was that the 86 spaces should be really 75 because usually you have a building that doesn't have a courtyard, and what they do is they measure the outside of the building, and that's the square footage total. And then from that you derive the presumption that would not be required but would be presumptive. Now he argued that it really should be 75 because when you cut out the courtyard you get extra square footage in that courtyard space there, extra wall square footage is what it would be, and then he came up with 75 as that total.
Well, we weren't really sure if the 75 was the right way to look at it, because that's not the standard. He was looking at interior square feet. That's not the standard, so we weren't really sure if 75 was right, or 86 seemed too large given that there was a courtyard. So what we came up with was 80, kind of somewhere in the middle, and we thought that the spaces on the street should count towards the parking. It seemed to make sense since they were dedicating it. So that would leave them with a deficit of 80 minus 8 spaces would be 72 that they should have, and they're going to provide 65, so that left a deficit of 7. We thought that it would be good for them to try to find 7 spaces, good for the town, and if they can't find something nearby, there isn't currently a payment in lieu set up, but we, as a board, we encourage that to be explored because we would rather see a more unified parking program than just scattered parking all over that is very competitive in nature, where people don't want someone to park there unless they're currently shopping or they'll get towed. So, I mean, we've discussed ways of kind of dealing with the parking problem by having businesses collaborate and come up with maps, or, you know, something needs to be done, but we thought that this developer could be encouraged to help with that by having 7 spaces that are required. So we didn't want to give them a toll free ride, but we like the project and we think it'll be an asset to the downtown, and 7 parking spots didn't seem too onerous. So that's what we came up with. If anyone has any questions, I can try to answer them.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have a question about recommendation C. You'd indicated, when I say you, the board, the transportation board indicated that there should be 24 bicycle parking spaces. And
yes,
if you could provide the rationale why 24 was selected. Because I think the applicant said 20 and yours is an additional 4. And I understand the covered part and all that kind of stuff, but I just kind of want to, what was your rationale for asking for the increase?
Well, we're all cyclists, so.
Okay. Good enough.
Try to get more racks.
That's rational.
This is a rare time where we're called, you know, for a justification, I guess. I don't really have
Not that I'm opposed to it. I just thought if there was some reason because of the way the building was configured, or there was additional space for an additional bike rack or something like that.
I don't recall that being what occurred.
Okay. Daniel's bike is really big.
Okay.
It's part of it.
Not trying to get you.
I have a trailer on my bike, so I take up a couple spots.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that just being an advisory board, we just that was our advice.
Right.
Well, you'll have to come up and be sworn.
But it's not that big issue. I'm not opposed to the addition.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily have to.
Are there other?
I think Kai.
While she's coming up, are there other questions about the transportation board recommendation? If not, Heidi.
The way I remember it, there were already 24. I think there were 25, but we kept getting these number things going on all night. But when we voted on it, we said at least 24.
Okay.
And there were already 24 showing on the plan the way he showed it to us. And that's why.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah.
Thanks.
That's good.
And just to reiterate, what we were presented with was the plan, not with the restaurant. So we were shown 86 spots.
Okay.
So our recommendation of 80 is based on that. It's between
on no restaurant.
No restaurant.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if it was the accessory, because tonight he said with the accessory it only requires 75. So I'm not sure if that 75 has his argument worked into it. I just don't know.
Okay.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
All right.
Mark?
Yes.
I want to see if we get Marty up for a minute to comment on the relationship of the courtyard to the parking requirement that Daniel mentioned.
And then Jennifer McMillan after.
Can I ask you to clarify? Just
Daniel had said that, the architect told the TAB that the courtyard space was counted in the parking requirement, but in fact,
that it had an impact on how many parking spaces they were going to need.
Well, David had shown, perhaps you're talking about the drawing you showed, David?
The courtyard was not counted in any of the square footage.
It was not?
Correct.
Okay, so.
That was incorrect.
So Daniel misunderstood.
Correct.
Okay, thanks, Buffy.
No, you misunderstood. What I meant to say, I'll be more specific, is that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is with a courtyard, you get more wall square footage. If you just have a box, you put a tape around it, you know, you get the square footage, let's say 100,000 square feet.
Right.
Well, in this case, you'd have to have the tape go around
and, inside.
And then inside. So you'd get more than 100 square feet, even if the outside were. But you wouldn't gain that square footage as retail.
That's correct. I think what we talked about with the planning department was net versus gross. The gross square footage is from the exterior wall, the outside perimeter. Net would be the inside wall.
Okay, thanks. Marty, as long as you're there, could you also comment on the restaurant as accessory versus restaurant as use, how that's interpreted in the...
Sure, this is just something we were exploring in terms of recognizing that restaurants were really pushing the numbers. 1 to 100 square feet is the standard for restaurants, and that's three times as much as the standard for retail. So we had conversations about that and discussed the possibility that restaurants might be excluded as a permissible use, but with the understanding that food sales might occur as what we would call an accessory use. I just give you a real-world example. There's a tienda on Main Street that has a small grill inside, and that grill, it has a bar area where three or four people can sit down and eat the food they order, but most people, I'm just speaking off the cuff, haven't studied it, but I would say most people pick up their food and take it elsewhere to eat it. So it's a grill, quote unquote, but it's the entirety of the place is a grocery store, not a restaurant.
Right.
So that's the concept that we're exploring with them.
Okay. Thanks.
Marty, I had a question that maybe you can answer. David alluded to some discussion that was dismissed about the Zipcar. Could you?
Sure. What we discussed, and David may want to speak to this further, they were in conversations about parking and what they should and should not receive credit for in terms of our flexibility provisions related to parking. They were suggesting that a Zipcar, be credited toward some number of parking spaces or in lieu of some number of parking spaces. And our kind of take on it was that it would be a complicated endeavor to mandate that a Zipcar be there available on site in perpetuity. A Zipcar is a private program separate of the town, separate of this developer. So, and David may want to step in here. I think they were still exploring the idea of a Zipcar being a part of the development, but we were suggesting that it would just be complicated to make it a part of the terms of the permit. Does that help?
Well, several things were kind of mentioned through David's presentation about alternate ways to, tackle, the parking question, since it does loom large on the feeling about this project. And, I don't know how we go about further exploring that, because Zipcars is one of them. What also was mentioned is having some kind of an agreement with other mixed-use plans along that strip to create some other kind of, office parking plan. How do we go about, exploring the potential for that? Because there will be several mixed-use plans along that very strip, and the problem, it has a multiplier effect. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I think I don't want to speak for David. He can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I think they, the team that came here tonight with an application came to the room prepared to discuss this openly and openly explore ideas. I don't think they have any expectation that you're going to make a decision tonight, and they're
free and ready to openly explore this. So I don't know that I'm answering your question with a firm, how we get from here to there, except to say that they're open to the discussion. Zipcar, David can speak to that. I think they're probably open to that being a part of the discussion. And perhaps what you're, if I understand your comments correctly, you're getting at the idea that the town might at some point in the future need to create or adopt some type of parking plan for the downtown, and you seem to kind of be focusing on Robeson Street.
Right.
But I guess I'm speaking a little more broadly to the downtown, but we've been discussing that as a staff. I don't think we're prepared to report.
I'm just wondering if the set of developers that are looking to build in those areas would work together to come up with some way to address the need.
Yeah, that was I don't know if it was that directly, but the general idea that multiple property owners and multiple developers be brought to the table. I know in the first TAB meeting when I was in the room, that idea was thrown about a bit. So I don't know whether other developers would be prepared to do that, but the idea has been touched on.
Okay. If we could hear from, I have Jennifer McMillan still signed up to speak. So if we can. And let me get a couple others.
I went to the.
Go ahead.
I went to the presentation for this building when it came before the planning board, and I'm amazed at how much has happened since then. But the presentation that I saw showed a building that needed 104 spaces and only had 64. And it seems that in all of the discussion, whether you're talking about 104 spaces or 84 spaces, you need to take 29 of those spaces out for the apartments. There was some discussion in front of the planning board about whether or not the spaces, those 29 spaces, which are reserved for the apartments, or they're required because of the residential component, do not necessarily go with the condominiums, that the condominiums could be built and sold, and the parking could be separated from that. And I think that that's an issue that really needs to be looked at and thought about when considering this building. I think we do need to remember what happened with Pacifica, which was built with very little parking, and it was built very much as a green-minded development, and everybody came back at the end of the day and said, we need more parking. We cannot live with these parking circumstances. I don't see any reason to expect anything different from that with this development because it's not a green development. It's not geared towards a bunch of people who are into water reuse and co-housing. I'm not sure whether what the town staff is recommending now is 75 spaces or 104 spaces. I know that the agenda that went out for this meeting said 104. And I am here to speak as a business owner in downtown Carrboro, and I think it goes to the long-term objectives of the town, which is to have a healthy, viable local economy. And I think that what you're seeing is more and more parking going away, and it absolutely is impacting the businesses. It's already beginning to have a negative impact, and that is only going to have an exponential effect as these buildings come online and the parking that is there now continues to go away. I am very alarmed that I don't see anything coming down the road to address this or fix it. And I think that, when you're in a hole, you should stop digging. I would very strongly ask you to think about approving this building under these circumstances, knowing those things. And I think the other people who have stood up to talk that have said there needs to be consistency, whatever decision you make now speaks to decisions you make in the future. If that is the case, I think you have to be as strict as possible in making sure there is adequate parking, because if every building that comes through gets by with a little bit less than should be there, or you go ahead and do it and saying, well, we'll do a payment in lieu and we'll raise some money and then we'll begin to think about building a parking deck and coming up with a town parking plan, which absolutely needs to be done, but I think you should do that first. It's long, long overdue, and I know that people work really hard and meet continuously to talk about parking, but they don't have the resources. I mean, if you don't have the money to acquire the land to provide the parking, the town has no say. If every single landowner in downtown Carrboro, and believe me, more than one of them is seriously discussing fencing off their lot and stopping people from coming and going. If you don't want to see that happen, then you need to come up with a plan. The long-term, and in terms of talking about harmony with the long-term goals of this town, what we have, the reason why Carrboro is successful as an economy, the reason why we have businesses when Franklin Street don't, is because there is pretty easy free parking. And it's not that Franklin Street doesn't have parking, it's just not easy. And if you take that away, I think that Carrboro is going to lose all the people that come here to South Point, to some place that does have parking. It's not like we don't have competition regionally. And I think it's a very nice idea that some people have, that if we're really dense and we don't provide parking, then people won't drive. And I would be right there with them if that were going to happen. But it's a nice idea that doesn't work for the businesses. And the other nice idea that everybody has is that you want a strong economy and a good tax base. And no parking and a good tax base are really at odds with each other. I think that talking about the goodwill of having this courtyard, that they should get credit for the parking because they're providing public space, I think we have a very good example of Weaver Street, that private public space that is in a right-of-way to the town is not true public space. They can pull that back and do anything they want to with that space and dictate how it gets used. I don't think that should factor into this discussion. I really would like to know if there's going to be 1,000 trips a day divided over 30 to 40-something parking spaces. I mean, that's a lot of turnover in those parking spaces. I question those numbers. I question if you say, well, there won't be any restaurants or they'll just be accessory use restaurants, what's to stop some point in the future for them building a build-out and these buildings become restaurants? It's still in the zoning that a restaurant is of allowable use, unless I really don't understand. I think you need to think about whatever they do now, they're not going to be restricted in the future from doing something else. And so you need to plan for all allowable uses when you consider parking. The comment that there would be no impact on Maple Avenue because it's not a route of egress, I think discounts the fact that if you have this pressure on parking, people are going to be driving down that road looking for parking spaces, whether it's allowed or not. So I think there will be traffic impacts on that neighborhood. I'm just here to say, as a business owner, and I would like to say that I speak for other similar local downtown businesses, that there really, really needs to be a parking plan. The town needs to have some way to provide parking to businesses that's beyond everybody get together and agree to share, because ultimately, if people decide to stop sharing, there's nothing you can do. And I really would strongly recommend, for the sake of the local economy, that you do not approve this building as it is. It seems to me that this was a building that was designed without parking in mind. They said they hit a roadblock. They said, well, this is as much as we can do, but we're going to continue to build to the maximum, and we're just going to sort of, I mean, what I heard at the planning meeting was, well, people will use bicycles, and we're going to have a zip car, and, you know, I think it's great that they have bicycle racks. I'll be right there putting my bicycle on them. That doesn't take the place that a lot of the people that are shopping and spending their money in Carrboro are not getting here by bicycle. They're driving. And once they get here, they need a place to park. And there's fewer and fewer places to park. And Carrboro has existed on the philosophy of you park once and then you walk. And that's why we can get away with thinking that we're a really walkable, great community, is because you can park and it doesn't matter how far you walk. Parking and walking go hand in hand. And you can't just expect people to walk if they can't get within walking distance. And what's going to happen is they're going to have to drive from business and get in their car to go to the next business and get in their car to go to the next business, and it'll be congested, and there'll be nothing. There won't be walking. There will be cars. There won't be a good business climate. And I think I'm rambling at this point, but I do think you need to make a decision thinking towards the future. I think you need to be very, very conservative and err on the side of parking. I totally agree with this. What the staff said is that their recommendations are already based on conservative numbers that have been scaled back from prior presumptive parking requirements. And please keep in mind all of the small businesses that are really competing for parking and need to have some sort of bigger plan in place. And with that in place, if that were in place, and then this project were to come along and able to do payment in lieu to allow that to happen, I would applaud it. But I think that the plan has to happen first. I don't think you can approve the building and then say, well, we'll figure it out a little bit later. And thank you very much.
All right.
Just
location of your business.
Oh, I'm sorry. My business is nested. I'm at 118 East Main Street, right across the street from the Spotted Dog.
Okay, thank you.
Mark.
They'll be open at 11 tomorrow. And
10.
10.
I'd like us to note that we have 11 emails from people who either own businesses and or work downtown, and they're all pretty much seeing from the same page as Jenny. So
yeah.
Please take time to read them, and they will be in the record.
Yeah, we'll enter them into the record. All right. Thank you, Jennifer. Bob Kirshner and then James Carnahan. Both come up there and get sworn at the same time. Yeah.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes. How are you all doing tonight? It's kind of refreshing being up here and being the one that's not pounding the fist about parking. what I am up here about, and I'll throw that there's several issues about this particular item. I'm going to try to concentrate on one. I see it as more of being a town policy issue that I guess you all look at me to raise flags when I see a concern. Or maybe you don't look forward to it. however, I'm raising a concern or issue with the condition in the part of for the affordable housing components there where you're requiring the transfer fee. As if you make it a condition of approval, that in effect makes it the town is enforcing a policy on future homeowners who are not here to be able to represent themselves. They're signing away their rights that doesn't exist yet. And without means of making changes, adjustments, or how to even administer it. The fact that the town is imposing this as a social condition that the town is trying to address on a town level makes this provision no more than a town-imposed tax to a specific set of homeowners. This raises several questions, such as, can the town take such action without a state approval if you consider this like a tax or fee? Can the town do this without state or review, or does it require a referendum from citizens? Would such a tax on such a targeted group of people even be legal to begin with? Because you are specifying a specific group of 15 people. To raise the question of what is the Homeowners Association position on this? Are they even properly represented here? Clearly, the developer, whose own self-interest to get approval, cannot represent the Homeowners Association that does not even exist yet. At the timing stated in the provision, it is after the fact, and it's too late. It is... this is not a form of taxation without representation. Is it even constitutionally legal? don't misunderstand me, my line of questioning. I'm just trying to, it's a sensitive question, I believe. I'm not arguing against the homeowners trying to support the affordability of housing. I'm not trying to attack the intention. My concern is the method that's being used to accomplish this. It would be entirely different if the Homeowners Association voluntarily voted to add this to their covenants. And it is okay for the town to ask for such. It is just that this provision requires this action that raises flags for me. I am afraid that if passed as is, you will be taking the town down an indefensible path, and it would not surprise me to see this challenged in court at a future date. This is a case of overlooked, unintended consequences based on good intentions, which I have often referred to in the past. At the very least, this provision should be tabled or further studied, if not removed altogether, or modified to be as a voluntary action by the homeowners as a request by the town. Again, they have no way of changing, fixing, modifying, or administering it. It's just required of them that they will do it. Again, if this is a town policy you want to impose, another approach to that would be to take a referendum and pass a 1% transfer tax on all property in the town to go to a fund. So, thank you.
All right. Jim Bob, we don't have the authority.
You might as well tell them now.
Yeah, well, Alderman Brown points out, we definitely don't have the authority to do that townwide, but we'll get some answers to some of the questions you asked.
Good evening, James Carnahan, both to make some comments on behalf of the Planning Board and then a couple of personal comments on the project. I just wanted to underscore a couple of things the Planning Board recommended and pretty consistent with what just about everybody else has said. We'd like to see more parking. We suggested a number of strategies. Thought it might be possible to find some more underground by expanding the envelope of the basement area to the west. Obtain employee parking off-site. I have that underlined. I'll come back in a moment. As far as the numbers, the presumptive numbers, we thought it would be okay to require only one space per residential unit. And so that would theoretically reduce the presumptive standard from the presumptive requirement from 104 to 93. Planning Board was not aware of the restaurant as an accessory use, so we did not have an opportunity to discuss that at all. Eliminate higher traffic generating uses. I guess that's what the presumptive, accessory restaurant as accessory is about. But I'm going to say particularly obtain employee parking off-site or obtain some parking off-site because and ask it to be secured for a period of time, say 5 years, and then to be looked at in 5 years. As conditions change, it means you can proceed with the project pretty much as it appears and address these issues which have been raised about the need for parking in the project. The second item I wanted to highlight was that the designer wants to have canopies. The canopies would come into the public right-of-way. It's not currently allowed. We'd like it to be allowed, and we said that we would like these canopies to be on a fabric and to meet wind load requirements of the North Carolina Building Code. The balance are my personal comments, and I think there's much to be excited about this project. For me to be as enthusiastic about it as I would like, I also want to see the parking. I really appreciate the folks from the business community who came and spent a great deal of time really giving us a very detailed idea of what's happening on the ground in and around this project. And so I think we do need to be very mindful of the vitality in our community that we already have, and that might seem to be more vulnerable right now, given what's going on with the national economy. As to the conceptual issue, the idea that we're in a transition, we'd like to go from a place where we're mostly dependent on automobiles and we need all of this parking to a place sometime where we have much less need of the automobiles because we have the transportation in place and we have the configuration of activities such that people can walk. We're not there yet, and it's not going to happen like that. It's going to take a period of time. I don't know what it's going to be. And so we need to look at these projects this way and say, for better or worse, in the beginning, we want the projects to have the parking and address that need and work to design the projects and also work for strategies throughout the town. For instance, working on our townwide parking strategy that will give us the flexibility so we can approve a project of this intensity, but not without having negative impacts on the people already doing business and getting us to the goal that we want to get to. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you have any questions
for me. I have a question. You suggested, or the Planning Commission suggested, to expand the west envelope of the subterranean parking lot.
Well, my...
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
I looked at the drawings, uh-huh. And it looks to me that the envelope, that is to say, that the shape of the basement, that there's actually room that it could be pushed somewhat to the west and get four or five more spaces. That's how I read the drawings. I could be wrong.
Okay, thanks.
James, I have a question for you. In terms of the recommendation of employee parking off-site, have you all had any discussions with business owners do you have some sense of the viability of that, you know, if that parking is provided, do the employees actually go there as opposed to, you know, seeking some alternate parking space closer, perhaps?
It's not so much from conversations with the folks as what I understand happens in downtown Chapel Hill, for instance, top of the hill. They don't have any parking on site. Mm-hmm. That many places make...
But I think the point that was made earlier about the difference in accessibility of free parking in downtown Chapel Hill, that's my point, is that there are places like the town lots, the Carmel lot, you know, where people are accustomed to parking. And
well, the idea is that it's the off-site parking is not such an advantage for shoppers. You really want the shoppers to be able to come and park at the right building. But in the case of a lot of employees, if you can find some parking, Chapel Hill's rule is requires it to be within 1,200 feet. That for many employees, not all of them, but for many employees, they just need to get their car somewhere and then they can walk the last bit. And that frees up then the rest of the space to be just for the residents and for the people coming to use the building during the day.
Almost all the Century Center staff does that, for example, yeah. The recreation staff.
One person's employee parking is another person's customer parking. I think you have to remember.
Well, if they buy something off-site.
No, what I'm saying is where employees may be parking who work at this particular building, they may be parking where the customers of another business would be parking. We're not that big.
That's kind of what I was asking.
The other thing we need to keep in mind when we're talking about this, right now, all day and most of the night, people are parked on at least one side of Maple Avenue Extension, if not both. That will be gone. So even though that's not official parking, that parking will be gone, and that can be from 6 to 8 spaces. I know we have a huge discussion of this coming up on Sunday, and we can also discuss it on the 26th.
On Monday.
Monday. Right. Aren't you looking forward to it?
It's coming up a little too close for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Done with me.
Yes.
Thank God.
All right. Ellen Perry wanted to speak. Come get sworn. Patrick, are you still going to speak? All right, we'll come up and get sworn with Ellen. Yes, absolutely. We're on break
after. You solemnly swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge.
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Where do you
want me? Right there is good. Just turn.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, guys. This is Ellen Perry. I have two big concerns. Where is Easy Rider supposed to park if they can't get down in the downstairs? I could not tell how high the thing is, but I know it's 11 feet. Easy Rider is
11 feet tall.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we need access, or we need a parking spot for people. And I think one parking spot ought to be for customer. I mean, I think one parking spot ought to be just for Easy Rider, because it's going to be hard as hell to get out. Use my language, but it is. So, you know, I'm just thinking about people with disabilities.
All right.
And I couldn't tell on the plans how high the thing was. Okay. I'm very concerned that it's not high enough. And if the basement's not high enough, then people with disabilities are not going to be able to access that. And what if the person has a van? That's a big concern.
That's important.
Yeah. I'm going to get a van sooner or later. So what happens if I have a van and can't get down into it?
All right. We'll find out the
Thanks.
Answer to that question. Thank you. Patrick.
Good evening. My name is Patrick McDonough. Some of you may know me in my role as a TTA employee. I'm here as a citizen of 105 Fidelity Street, Carver, tonight, and in no way speaking for my employer. I've heard a lot of talk about parking this evening. That's why I'm here as well. I was back down the street in 2001 when Dan Burden was here doing the charrette for downtown Carver, and the type of building that we've looked at tonight, I'm excited to say, are it's one of the types of buildings I had hoped, and I think other citizens had hoped to see out of that process. In terms of the parking, we've heard a high number tonight of 104, 105, and another number around 65. I think you guys have two issues here with this building that need to be disentangled. The first is, you have how do we deal with parking in downtown Carborough, which is a much larger issue of how do we deal with parking at this building. I'm going to say something that may be unpopular, but I'm going to put it out there. As long as there's the idea that we can forever have unlimited free parking in downtown Carborough that is minimally managed, you will never solve your parking problem. If we have a parking deck and we invite everybody to come in it, and it's got 375 spaces, we will then have a massive traffic jam of people trying to get into the parking deck who will also have trouble getting in and out. There's a lot of parking in Carborough. It is piecemeal. Helping manage it will make that work better. But thinking about this building, I commend the T-Board at looking at 80 spaces. I respectfully disagree with the business owner that this is going to be like Pacifica. I think there are a lot of things about being downtown that are very different from being at Pacifica. I have friends who live at Pacifica, and when I walk outside their apartment, I'm going to have to walk at least 3/4 of a mile to 1 mile to purchase anything that isn't someone selling me something at a yard sale. When you walk outside of this building, you'll be able to get groceries, medicine at CVS, a whole bunch of other things on foot, daily within a very close walk of the building. When you look at evidence around the country for places that are sort of transit-oriented developments, people who live in these areas make many fewer trips by car than places that are relatively isolated, such as Pacifica at the end of Hanna Street. One strategy that I wish that the T-Board had looked into that they didn't is the idea of parking unbundling. And unbundling is the idea that you price parking separately from units. An example of this would be if you had a two-person household who's moving into a two-bedroom condo, that instead of saying, okay, you have two bedrooms, you automatically get two spaces, they have the option to purchase up to two spaces. If they decide, well, we're moving downtown and one of us works at UNC and I can take one of three buses that come through all the time, we only need one car, then they only buy one space. And then if you go through this, providing this option to all the residents, you may get your residential parking down. Why would you do this? Well, if you free up 3 to 5 residential parking spaces, those are spaces that the businesses can use. And again, you're trying to manage your parking through some pricing. With the affordable housing, I know that's an issue of should we be making people who are in affordable housing units buy parking in addition to buying a unit. Some of the costs that drive up affordable housing in other places is including parking in the price. A family may say, we don't need parking. I know there's a group in Chicago, which is, I think it's Bethel New Life, a church group out there, which has worked in affordable housing, and they've basically done affordable parking subsidized for, you know, one space a unit. So that's something that you don't have to be hard and fast with if you wanted to do unbundling. So I mean, my suggestion there is, I know parking downtown, I know there's some folks that are going to start working on that. That's good. It's a long-run issue that needs to be worked on. But I do think about the ability to sell the spaces. I think if you're going to sell spaces to residents and people say, oh, we don't need two spaces, we only need one, you shouldn't be able to sell the residents the space to any random person who comes in. It should be allotted for business uses that are in that building. But I think that's one way that you're going to help manage some of your parking demand down a bit to try to better accommodate the businesses while giving the residents as much as they need without giving them more parking than they need. Thank you.
Right. We're we're going to take a 3-minute recess, and then we'll continue our discussion.
We're going to...
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back from the break. Before I go on, let me just say that Lydia Lavelle had to leave, and she'll be watching the rest of this hearing on video. She went to a... we sent her to school. When you get elected in North Carolina, there is a school of government training for newly elected officials in which we learn all about what kind of things we are and are not supposed to be doing. And she is going to be doing that bright and early tomorrow morning in Wilmington and is on her way there now. All right, so that she can better serve you in the future. All right. But she will be watching the tapes, so we can't say anything mean about her while she's gone. So just on notice.
You can just speed through that part.
Oh, I got you. Okay. We'll get that edited out. All right. I hesitate to even ask, is there anybody else who wants to speak? All right. Come on up and make it quick. You need to be sworn in.
So, this way, over from the evidence you're about to give us the truth to the best of your knowledge.
I do.
Hi, I'm David Jesse. I'm one of the owners of the building across the street, the old Trading Post property. I'm coming up here feeling conflicted because it's against my better judgment as a businessman to oppose a project like this, since I'm going to be the only guy on the block that has adequate parking. On the other hand, right now I get to be a good neighbor, and I let people come and go and park and do what they like, and I don't tow anybody. I put one sign out that says parking is for customers of this establishment and all the businesses that are there, but I don't enforce it that rigorously unless you know, people park right in front of the front door of the restaurant at 8 o'clock at night when they're full, and that's just really rude. And I'll tell them they've got to go somewhere else. But, you know, if you went over to my building right now and stood on the roof and looked down at the proposed project and all around it, there are so many cars parked all around there. You might think that Bruce Springsteen is doing an acoustic show at the Open Eye. I mean, it's crowded down there. It's a party down there right now. Tyler's is having their pint night. And whenever there's a game, people flood into town. And they drive here. And Jennifer's absolutely right. You know, all these parking spaces that are dedicated for the apartments, you just take them off the table. And I'm sure those people have friends. You know, this is getting to be kind of like the white elephant in the room. And I think it's a great-looking building. I told them that before. It's a fantastic-looking project. I mean, when I first went after a piece of property in Carrboro, I went after their property. And I went to Schulke and I said, I want to see I'd like to build a ziggurat building. And this was back in 2002. And I could see plants terraced off the balconies, and I think it would be really great. I just don't see how we're going to amend the parking issue, and I'm not really crazy about parking decks, although they're designing some really nice ones these days. You know, if you approve this project, can you bring it to yourselves to say, well, we're going to pick some place in town and we're going to build a parking deck? You know, because right now it's really true what Jennifer said, and that's how I found my property. I used to park there when it was a municipal parking lot, and I would grab my Save the Earth bag and I'd walk all over town and come back to my car and go, and I didn't have to worry about getting in my car for each little trip, and what a drag that is. And if you want to see where this is going, then just go right down Main Street where it becomes Franklin Street, and it's a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the ass. I really don't like to go down to Franklin Street and a lot of times I won't go to 411, even though I love their food, because I got to go to some little machine and get a ticket and go back and stick it on my car and then come back and go in, and then I got to go back there and feed it some more if I'm in there having a good time, and it's just a drag. And every little space down there is managed, and that's not true in Carrboro. I mean, it kind of is in some places. But, you know, I'm afraid people are going to put my face up on the wall and start throwing darts at it, because I'm going to have to put, you know, my property on T. Roy's cruise list. He's going to come over and start towing cars. I don't want to do that. I like people to be able to come over there and park and come and go as they please. I don't have a solution for this, except, I mean, I had this one idea that you could make Roberson one way and Carr one way the other way, and you could have all the cars diagonally park, and that way you could somehow amend it and have more places for people to park. But beyond that, since they can't dig down any deeper, you know, unless they lopped off a couple of levels, which that's where people want to live. And I'm all for that. So.
Thank you.
That's it.
All right. Pint night, you said.
Thanks, David.
All right.
still serving.
the attorney.
I'm sorry. I thought I was not going to speak, but if I may.
That's okay.
Julia Young on behalf of Darkon. I just wanted to address a couple of the concerns that some of the folks in the community have raised. Specifically, I think Jenny noted that the restaurant in the future might be used in a different way that would create additional parking problems. I think that the staff represented in its report that there would be a conditioned permit so that that could not happen and that this would be maintained, excuse me, as a prepared, plated restaurant only and not as a restaurant as one might think of it otherwise. And then several other people, I think James Carnahan, Patrick, have noted that there are public parking problems already in Carrboro, and I would ask the board to consider as it makes its decision on this project to bear in mind that this one developer should not be required to fix that problem. It is a townwide problem, and while they need to contribute and do the things to ensure that they're not adding to the problem, they themselves shouldn't be required to fix the problem. And to also echo some of the concerns of the current business owners, I'd ask if they would be willing to give up their dressing rooms or bathrooms to provide additional parking, because that's what they're asking this developer to do. And so in bringing their concerns forward, I ask them that question long-term to think about how they would like to be treated moving forward as well. And finally, the affordable housing requirement, excuse me, that was addressed on the transfer fee, I think this board will remember that we were before it in October requesting for a payment in lieu, and that in space of that, we have agreed to the transfer fee. I think it is not unfair to future homeowners or future homeowners associations because it would be incorporated into the declarations which are recorded in public record, and any homeowner who would like to purchase these units would be privy to that requirement before purchasing, and if they didn't like it, they could buy somewhere else. So I don't think that that is a long-term problem or a taxation issue for the developer or this board. Thank you.
On page or buried in the documents?
I'm sure I have this free flow.
Yeah, we'll take note of condominium declarations are long. It's true. All right. Yes. Okay. I would like to suggest it's starting to get late. I would like to, and we have one more agenda item after this. I would like to suggest to the board that I think we are going to have some further discussion of this on another date. Clearly, I don't want to have a grand debate about parking in the downtown generally because, for one thing, we're going to have a discussion next Monday about that subject. Maybe it would be best for now to focus on asking and on putting out there what kind of information we're going to need in order to have an intelligent discussion at our next meeting.
Good idea.
Dan?
Yeah, I have two that I've thought of at the moment in terms of things from staff. One is some better clarification on this kind of range of numbers we've heard about parking and how those relate to uses, because we've heard a lot of different numbers tonight. And you know, maybe in some sense they're all valid, but, you know, if there could be something in our materials that really establish what the presumptive requirement is or what it might be, and in each case why. And then the other thing is in terms of the idea that we're beginning on Monday a discussion that may well lead to the parking plan that several speakers have alluded to, but that we don't have that plan now, I'd like to know next month whether it's possible to construct a condition such that, and presuming the developers was willing to do a payment in lieu, that if we had a specific plan in place at the right time in the process, and I assume that could be farther along than CUP, could be farther into the actual construction process, that if available, the payment in lieu could happen, but that if we didn't have the mechanism to do that, that then the off-site parking would kick in as the alternate. So whether it's possible to construct a condition in that such a manner. And that's what I have for the moment.
Well, I got a couple. I guess I need to have some clarification from staff. If there's on-site parking, who would be able to park there? That's my first question. Don't have, these are just questions that I need to have answers to. With regards to, a couple of years ago, when we have discussed parking, there was a map done, and I'm asking you to look back and see where that map is to bring us, if possible, in a month, or maybe for the retreat, since we're going to be discussing parking. Just, it's an old map, I know, and so it may not be as up-to-date as we would like with regards to the parking situation in downtown.
And there was some, if you're thinking the same map I'm thinking of, it showed potential areas where parking could be sited.
Right. Let's see. Wait, I had a note. I did ask for the prior developments that we've approved downtown, Alberta and Main Street, if you could just have a little block that says the number of parking spaces. And the underlying, if it was 300 square feet per parking space, or what the methodology was. If it is the board's desire to talk about parking at the retreat, then a couple of years ago, I think we had some documentation about payment in lieu. Roy can refresh my memory. I think we had, along with that discussion about where that parking was, there was something about payment in lieu in other jurisdictions that had it and how they used it. I think that would inform the discussion during the retreat and further discussion. And I'm talking about, this is old stuff. This is not, I've been on the board 9 years, so my brain could slightly be wrong, but I'm not asking the staff to, if they can find it, give us new stuff, but the old stuff that we had previously, if you can find it. I think, I'm not sure. For some reason, my brain has a memory of looking at a document that talked about payment in lieu. But I'm not sure. But if it's, let me put it this way, if it's not, don't create a new document because only it's a week from the retreat, and it'll have to be one of the things that we will need to discuss. Because I'm going to tell the board, without some standard for payment in lieu, we shouldn't take money and not use it. So if you can't find it, that's fine. I'm sure we're not going to resolve the parking issue at the retreat, and that'll just be something that we will need later on. Yes?
Just to make sure we're all on the same page about Monday, if you'll recall the conversation, you all decided to make the switch from Insperk report to downtown parking as an issue to use as an intro into the session of economic development and not a really long involved issue or discussion about parking in a way that, you know, you're going to resolve parking on Monday. And, in fact, based on the conversation we had with you all last week, we've looked at the agenda again and have actually added more time to the economic development piece. And because we switched from Insperk to parking, actually are looking at probably only an hour or so in the morning to give you all more time to get into the meat of the economic development discussion. So I just, you know, we've revised again based on that conversation last week, and I want to make sure you all aren't expecting one thing and we're expecting something else, because this is really sort of an intro into the process, remembering that we've got the graduate students who have just been given a project to work on this with staff and ultimately with you all. And so, I just want to make sure that there aren't any unrealistic expectations about what we can do Monday morning.
Not a problem. And if that's the case, excuse me.
Can I follow up on that?
Well, I wasn't quite finished yet.
Okay.
If that's the case, then sort of hold that for at least for when this comes back up again. Because I think whatever we
requested information.
The requested information.
Right.
And that'll work well for me. And I think that's all right now.
Steve, if we get through that hour on Monday and decide we have more we want to talk about, like prior to getting into the study, will we have time on our work session a couple weeks later to continue to schedule that?
And the retreat's you all's retreat, so I'm not trying to control that, but we've got to have some structure to work from. And because you all said you really wanted to make sure you had time for the economic development discussion, so by the time you left on Monday, we had very concrete things in place to work on. I spent an hour yesterday and another hour today on the phone with Phil talking through that and trying to make sure that we address that issue. So I think if we don't do everything that you all want to do next Monday and you want another discussion about parking before the February 26th hearing, then we would plan to put it on the second Tuesday in February.
Steve, when was that graduate student's report expected? Is there a ballpark for?
I'm going to look back there because I don't know.
It's in the spring.
I know.
We have scheduled a preliminary report on the 5th of February. It's really, they're just starting to get it kicked off.
Okay.
But at the end, that probably won't be till late March or April. They'll give their final report to you guys.
Okay. I would like to request, ask the staff to ask the applicant, if they haven't done so yet, the consideration that James Carnahan mentioned about reconfiguring their basement, parking at the underground. Mm-hmm. And literally speaking, if they might be able to dig a little bit deeper to find the additional spots. I do remember a few years ago when talking with some folks, we did suggest going underground, and I was told that wasn't feasible and it would be highly expensive. And I really commend these folks for doing it. There's a lot of features in this building I really like, and I applaud. So they're doing it, they're providing the leadership, they might be able to continue doing that. But I also understand it's not fair to request this only from this applicant.
Dan, Joel, and then I got a couple information.
Yeah, the other point I recalled is I would like some more information on those potential for the 10 spaces on Carr Street in terms of what that would do to the layout of the sidewalks and green space on that side, and also if there were concerns about that parking that were previously raised at a neighborhood meeting or, you know, somewhere where neighborhood input was heard. I'd like to know what those were as well.
Joel. Just on the 26th, if somebody can tell me how long a CUP can stay open before we make a decision.
Okay.
I
just have four things. One, I just wanted to point out, I think Joel was asking a great question about what did we approve? What is the sort of implied precedent for the first phase of 300 East Main Street? Because we did have some parking discussions with that. But I wanted to, if I recall correctly, there was a number of parking spaces that they were going to provide immediately upon completion of the building, but then there was sort of the anticipation or a condition that had to do with within a certain period of time after the opening of the building, they had to provide some additional parking on the site. So just if we can make sure that we know what both of those numbers are, if you see what I'm saying, I want to know.
Second, if we could hear some response to Ellen's question about the how the paratransit will access the site. Third, maybe if the attorney could address the legal questions that Bob Kirshner was raising about transfer fee. There are some public policy questions which I think are just for the board to decide about, but the legal questions would just like some brief response to you. And then the last thing is, and this is again just a little refinement on what Joel was asking earlier, I would like to understand how many, not just how many, what the, I'm not just interested in the presumptive parking requirement for this entire building, but I need to understand better how much of that is for the residential component of the building and how much of it is for the commercial component of the building. And I'd also like some clarification about whether the whether there will be essentially assigned or reserved or assigned spaces for the residential units in the building, and how many, anyway, that type of thing, to understand that aspect of the project better. Jackie?
I'd like to reiterate my request that for a copy of the noise ordinance as it pertains to commercial construction,
yes,
abutting residential. And I would also like to know if we have, which we may not, a residence-only parking policy for surrounding neighborhoods. And if we don't, I'd like a copy of Chapel Hills just to see how that works.
Along with what Jackie was saying about the noise ordinance, I'd love to be able to see how what we've recommended in the past regarding those blockout times for construction. I know there were several developments where we looked at creating windows that are blocked out for noise, but I don't know what kind of standard we had for that, or if we had one. The second, Pat McDonough referred to the downtown, the traffic charrette, and I don't know whether we asked recently, but I'd like to dust that off and take a look at what those recommendations from that charrette were, because everything that Patrick said I remembered, but I'd like to see what the public position was.
Which
charrette? It was a downtown traffic. It was with the Dan Burden.
He was referring to the traffic part of the overall burden.
The downtown vision.
Right.
And there was a particular charrette where we talked about downtown traffic flow. And
okay. I'm asking because that was before my time.
That was part of the overall downtown charrette. It was like a subsection in
right. Right.
And
Roy was there.
Do you remember that?
What's Trish, you remember?
We did a focus group of downtown folks, and there was traffic was discussed.
Yeah. Because I think that this project has a lot of things folks are looking for, but I think that one of the very big issues that we're facing is that multiplier effect with each of the developments that are looking to come online. So we need to provide for small businesses to have their parking.
Okay.
But you can.
I'm afraid we've got to move on. Why don't you tell me after?
Mark, can I be excused?
The only point is that it's written in there, which makes it an unchangeable part of the governing document. I have no objection that they want to put that in. And makes it that the homeowner association has methods of amending it or fine tuning it in or not doing anything. The fact that it's written as being a condition of the approval has my concern.
Well, that's an interesting point. We're going to move on to. I know. I think a couple of members of the board may need to go at this point. I'm going to turn quickly to agenda item.
We need a motion to continue the public hearing.
Okay.
I'll move to continue the public hearing.
To what date?
February 26th.
February 26th.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. We will see you Monday, Jack.
Sunday.
Sunday.
You better be there Sunday.
I will be there Sunday in body. All right. Agenda item A5, Mr. Manager. Okay.
This is a public hearing on an ordinance amending the Carrboro Land Use Ordinance to modify foot candle limitations in B1C and B1G districts and parking space dimensions. The board must receive public comment prior to taking action on the draft ordinance that modifies maximum light levels in downtown zoning districts and reduces parking space length throughout the town. And Trish McGuire has a presentation in advance of the hearing. Trish.
Thank you. Take a look at our handout for just one moment. Okay. I've handed out for you a couple of recommendations which we did not include in your packets, and one and a corrected planning board recommendation. And because we were going to support the fire department, fire service once again with the resolution at the beginning of this item, I provided you the correct version of that as well.
Are you letting Travis do this?
I don't know what it is. It's just it's really a hot subject. So around here lately. So this text amendment request was submitted by Laura Van Zant, who is working with the Main Street properties folks on the 300 East Main Street projects. And it deals with two provisions in the ordinance. The first is foot candle limitations, which is currently set at 0.2 foot candles at the property line. The requested revision affects two zoning districts downtown, the B1C and the B1G. The other request deals with change in the parking space length requirement, reducing it from 18 feet to 19 feet. This is a universal type change that would apply to parking space lengths in all locations in town. So the presentation is just going to kind of break these down into two parts based on these two topics. Our current foot candle limitations, like affordable housing we talked about earlier tonight, came from the Northern Study Area Plan and was part of the implementation of good neighbor performance standards for the town. The light shielding requirements were established to deal with excess illumination. We still have some work to do in that area. Just as the understanding of the topic has been growing over the past almost 10 years. And then the other piece of it is property boundary limits, the point we're looking at tonight. And this piece was included to minimize spillage of light at the property line, particularly because we were talking about the Northern Study Area when this was implemented, reducing impacts to residential properties. Another reason we do limit excess illumination, though, is to prevent glare for drivers at night, because it can be very unsafe if you're moving from highly brightly lit locations to ones that are very dark. So foot candle is a unit of measurement that's basically measuring how much light is occurring at a specific distance from a source of light, or the amount of light falling on that object at a particular distance. And foot candle represents the amount of illumination one candle would make at a distance of 1 foot. And this is about the amount of light that North Carolina...
Is that a 1 foot long candle?
Well, that's about how much light it looks like if you take a picture of one candle. And the arrow up there shows, it would be a little bit more effective if it was dark in here, but that's 1 foot away from the light. So it goes out in these rings. 2 foot is about right out there. And that is the amount of light that the North Carolina Fire Code establishes that exit lines should provide at the ground or floor level. And 0.2 foot candles is obviously a reduction, a lesser amount than that. And that's approximately the amount of light one candle makes about 5 feet out. And this is the amount of light if you're in a movie theater or an auditorium that the exit signs have to, or the exit signs have to normally provide. So it's a much dimmer light. Emergency lighting in those locations does have to rise up to one foot candle. And this is a in-town hall photograph of one of our exit lights, and this arrow is about 5 feet out from sort of the light at ground level for that. So that's an approximation of 0.2 foot candles, but you can see how the light reduces in intensity as it moves out. It's an inverse relationship between the distance and the amount of light. So in terms of comparing these, our standards to other locations, we found that some local governments break these standards down based on adjacency to particular uses, whether they're residential or non-residential. We currently don't have that that approach in our ordinance. The residential limits varied from 0.1 to 0.8, and the non-residential from 0.1 to 5 foot candles at the property line. And then there were a few I found. I mean, this was not an exhaustive search, just a sort of anecdotal look at ordinances around the country. Some measure the foot candles in various locations, but these are the ones that are at the property line like we do here with our ordinance. The Illuminating Engineering Society, which is sort of a, as you might guess, an engineering society that's interested in illumination and this topic, recommends between 2 and 5 foot candles for public spaces with dark surroundings, so exterior locations. And those do fall within the range of the non-residential lighting standards we found, although we did see some that were much lower than that, like ours, for example. The International Dark Sky Association is a nonprofit organization that has been working on dark sky issues for a number of years, and they have in the past provided a model ordinance, and they're currently working on a revised version of that with the Illuminating Engineering Society, and it's not yet available for review. In looking at this topic, it appears that local governments and other folks are looking at a slight shift in the measures that we use to determine how much light is too much and how to control for light, you know, that falls across property lines and is a nuisance by advising maximum illumination per acre in certain locations, as well as very specific shielding provisions for lighting. Our ordinance currently does address shielding. We think fairly satisfactorily, but it takes a broad general approach, not a specific one, and we can explore that further. We are exploring that further in some draft ordinance provisions that have been prepared but have not yet, we've not yet had an opportunity to really comprehensively review. We hope to be doing that later this year as we get through some other environmental regulations that are on the table. So we have included language that would limit the additional illumination to the property boundaries in the B1C and B1G where residential properties are adjacent. And that would be residential properties that are in a residential zoning district or residential properties in a commercial zoning district. The intention is to provide for lower illumination where these residential uses are occurring, but higher where they're not. This is the downtown, and the B1C is this sort of gray zone here in the center. The B1G is the pink area around it. And the blue properties are those properties within the commercial zoning districts that are being used for residential purposes. So in these locations, any of the commercial properties around them would have to use the lower light limits if you did decide to increase the illumination to 2 foot candles at the property boundary. And then any of the property boundaries where these residential zoning districts coincide, that would be also the lower the standard that we have in place currently. And just an aerial view of that same image. And then just a few comments about the parking space length. Our current parking space standard is an 8.5 foot wide space, 19 feet long. The interest that has been presented in the amendment request focuses primarily on parking structures and the cost effectiveness of precast concrete spans of 60 feet. That's the most cost effective, as I understand it, and a good fit for small locations as well. So with a 60-foot span, you can achieve two 18-foot wide spaces and a 24-foot aisle. You can also achieve a 22-foot wide aisle and two 19-foot long spaces. In either case,
there would need to be a deviation from our standards, the standards we have currently in our ordinance in order to achieve that. This is for 90-degree parking. We do provide for narrower aisles when the parking is at an angle, but that's to get the maximum number of parking spaces in a to get the maximum number of spaces in a deck would allow. I mean, you'd use a parallel. I mean, excuse me, perpendicular spaces. I've looked a little bit at the average car length sizes, and obviously we all are familiar with some vehicles getting much larger, but average car lengths have been decreasing overall for the past almost 20 years, and which would suggest that we might be able to accommodate many vehicles with a smaller parking space than we do allow than we do currently, as well as achieving some opportunity cost benefits by freeing up a little bit of land for some other use, a little bit less cost for the paving. In looking at other local governments' regulations, there's a range of parking spaces, parking space lengths, and some of them actually go up as long as 20 feet for this type of parking space, a parallel regular parking space dimension, but many of them are down at 18 feet. So this change would also, and this change in the ordinance would also affect a provision that's not mentioned in this draft ordinance, but that does refer to the parking space length, and that is the minimum length of parallel spaces, parallel parking spaces, and it would be reduced to 21 feet if you did make this change.
Okay.
This is both in all cases that these are minimum parking, minimum dimensions, so there is room for folks to mark a larger space if they choose to do that.
Okay.
I just have two more slides to
make,
but
quick.
I'm happy to. Okay, a couple of pictures of cars parked in spaces, 16.5-foot long minivan, and a 61-foot wide parking lot. This is a really small parking deck. It's only 50 feet wide, but the spaces are 16.5 feet wide with a 17-foot wide aisle. But there were cars maneuvering in and out while I was
it's
there.
Subaru.
excellent handling cars.
Right.
steering.
Great wheel
drive. Yeah.
Good turning radius. The planning board has looked at this ordinance and has recommended the parking space change as it has been presented. They have proposed language to clarify the adjacent residential use as well. The TAB has recommended changes in the foot candle limits, but supports the parking space dimensional change for parking decks only. And I'd like to just mention that the staff is continuing, as we did in the agenda item, supporting these ordinance provisions. But I had communicated with our other town attorney, just a check on the language, and we haven't actually finalized what that language should be regarding the adjacent residential use. So we'd like to request that you might continue this item for a couple of weeks and let us just clarify that language and bring it back to you. If you support these changes, happy to answer
clarify
any questions.
Clarify which one, I'm sorry.
This is the part about foot candle limitations and adjacent residential
right.
uses.
I got you.
Right. I think that's
okay.
important. Yeah.
All right, and do we have two different ordinances for these two different changes?
No, they're both included in one ordinance, yes. And I did go through for you that we have, I handed out a revised resolution.
L.
And then the TAB, I mean the Planning Board's recommendation. James pointed out that we had the wrong one in front of you.
Do we have, I don't think I have anybody signed up.
I can answer a question.
No, don't. The
yeah, I have a question, well, I guess, for Laura.
Okay.
Which is, given that there's a more thorough lighting review going on, how immediate is your need in terms of concerns?
Really, there's not a lot of urgency in the lighting. With one proviso, our first couple of buildings we intend to build are not going to be right up against the property line. So we want to have some lighted storefronts, and that won't be any problem. It'll be the buildings down the road. What we would like to do, though, is not have to come back for a minor modification to our lengthy permitting process to amend those lights for those buildings that ultimately will be right up on the sidewalk. So if there could be some understanding that we could present those now, meeting whatever the current ordinance is, and down the road and we actually want to build those buildings, we could, if we could just make a simple change to amend that lighting plan to reflect whatever the ordinance was at the time, and have that be a pretty simple, quick, painless process, and then there's no urgency, if that makes sense.
I have a question for Trish also, but go ahead.
Well, just following up on that, I mean, obviously we're a ways away. I mean, we haven't even had a public hearing on the permit, the hypothetical permit. But
well, this affects our first building, too, that hasn't approved.
I see.
Well, mainly on the railroad right-of-way, because we have some concerns about graffiti. So we can get by with 22-foot candles, but we'd like to...
She wants enough light so people can read the graffiti. Yeah.
There you go. So that has been, it also does affect the
building. You don't restrain your eyes.
Yeah. Been
approved. It's, okay, all right. Okay, well, I mean, I don't really have any question about the parking deck, the parking space change. I mean,
I have one question.
Yes.
Which is, do we know anything about when parking spaces are shorter and longer vehicles park in them, how that affects the overall parking experience, or, you know, do more accidents occur because of people trying to, you know, getting, like, mixed signals visually from the lines and where the vehicles are? Is there any data on that?
I did not explore that question. I could certainly look into it and see if there is anything. I mean, that's one of the reasons, the TAB, I know, had some conversations about this, but, you know, the staff's approach was that we feel that maintaining a sufficient aisle width, you know, of 24 feet, of course, that's encroached upon a bit when you have a larger vehicle and, you know, it exceeds the parking space length. I mean, that does happen now with 19-foot long spaces, but I can certainly check and see. I did not look into that question.
Okay.
Will always be bad parkers.
There are certain people on the board are bad parkers and have had accidents in parking deck, and it has nothing to do with the length of the parking space. So I don't know if that makes that much difference.
I guess the staff is asking us to continue this public hearing. Is that right?
Yes.
Do we need to continue the public hearing? Is there some date in February, sooner than February 26th, we can have this come back? I mean, obviously we could accept public comment if there's some notable change on the night that it comes back.
If Trish is ready, I think we could actually come back on February 5th.
That's fine.
Works for me.
All right, so is there a motion to table this until February 5th?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The matter passed unanimously. We are...
Got one more item.
Sewer line. Is there anybody here to speak on the dedication of the sewer line to Owasso?
Apparently not.
Come on up.
you come up if you want to.
All right. Hearing no comment, is there a motion on the agenda item?
Move the resolution.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passing unanimously. We are adjourned.
We're just adjourned.
We'll be getting something.